on.
We're going to walk down to the Capitol. And we're going to cheer on our brave senators and congressmen and women.
But this is what you heard on the BBC 3 years later.
We're going to walk down to the Capitol, and I'll be there with you, and we fight. We fight like hell.
Another scandal to land at their door. We'll give you full details. In other news, the baby who was mauled to death by a family dog, the dog had possibly been spooked by fireworks. Details on that. And, of course, Chancellor Rachel Reeves. That speech on our watch just after 8. News 7 o'clock news on LBC's Next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, Chancellor Rachel Reeves is expected to reinforce the message of hard and serious choices in a speech from Downing Street this morning. She's expected to address speculation. She's preparing to raise income tax to plug a hole in the public finances. Ms Reeves is expected to say that people need to understand the circumstances surrounding the UK. Economist Vicky Price has told LBC the government's in a difficult position.
What this government could have done is reverse the national insurance contributions cut that Jeremy Hunt did before the elections of July 24. And of course, it was 10 billion in January, another 10 billion given away in April. And that had left a hole to begin with. So unfortunately, because of the pledge of not raising any of those main taxes that working people pay, that has left that problem hanging there.
Online pornography showing women being choked is to be made illegal after a review found such images are rife on websites. The measures are part of the government plans to tackle violence against women and girls. The Conservative peer Baroness Burton carried out a review earlier this year. She told LBC that immediate changes are needed.
If you want to try and reduce the sort of violence against women and girls and also teach boys the sort of what a good relationship is, you can't allow such a huge raft of violent content that online strangulation was adding up to, essentially.
Train passengers have been told not to travel north of Preston until later this week after yesterday's derailment in Cumbria. The Avanti West Coast train struck a landslide near Shap. 4 people suffered minor injuries. Regulator Ofwat is due in court, accused of allowing water companies to overcharge customers. The campaign group River Action is bringing the legal action, arguing that bills rising in England are for repairs that should have been carried out years ago. Ofwat rejects the claim. And a study has shown that walking more than 3,000 steps a day can slow down memory loss in patients with early signs of Alzheimer's disease. Research at Harvard University has found that moderate exercise reduces the buildup of toxic proteins in the brain. Higher levels of activity were linked to slower decline in thinking. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 97.01. It closed down 16 yesterday. The pound buys $1.31 and €1.14. LBC weather, wet and windy for much of England and Wales today. Drier for northern Scotland and southern England, feeling very mild, a high of 17 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
No one sees your small business like you do. The feeling when that unexpected big contract comes in. The butterflies. But that's the exciting bit of it being your business. And you wouldn't have it any other way. So breathe it all in. When your business is your life, we exist to help you live. Search O2 Business.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 3 minutes after 7 on Tuesday, November the 4th. As it is revealed on the weekend how the police lauded the fact they got to the scene of that train attack within 8 minutes, we now discover that the suspect, I hasten to add, was free to roam the streets of Cambridgeshire and allegedly came down to London for 24 hours after he'd marched into a barber's with a huge knife. Number of chances missed. We'll give you full details on that. And also ask, why has the Prime Minister not gone up? This is the worst knife attack in this country for decades. We can say that. Why has the Prime Minister not gone? Or the Home Secretary? Why is the Prime Minister off to Copacabana, rather up to Huntingdon? One could say the same of the royals. Would it have hurt for a prince or the Princess Royal or someone to go up and see the people in hospital? Why? Why has it been ignored? We'll look at that in more detail. Coming back to Westminster.
The Chancellor will promise today to make the choices necessary to deliver strong foundations for our economy for years to come. But what will this mean for you? I'm LBC's Natasha Clark at Rachel Reeves' Big Speech.
There are reportedly hundreds of victims of what's called a silent scandal concerning a pregnancy drug taken some years ago and now calls for another public inquiry. Mary Stewart was prescribed the drugs, DES tablets, by doctors. She was in Newcastle for 6 months in 1966. That's how far back it goes. She suffered multiple miscarriages.
He said, if I took this drug, it would help me keep the baby. So I took the drug in all innocence.
The shocking number of calls received by the Met on 999 that are not genuine emergencies, such as why your food order hasn't turned up. We'll give you some of the worst examples and remind you what 999 is actually there for. And with Christmas definitely just around the corner, never mind Kevin the Carrot or the Grinch in Asda, here's the juggernaut of Christmas ads. Doesn't mean a lot on the wireless, I get that. But go to LBC. It is the John Lewis Christmas advert. It's just been released. Go to LBC, the app, to check it out.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
So many questions concerning the aftermath of the train attack. We have to tread moderately careful because, as you know, someone is on charges, but they're not yet any charges about what would appear to be police failures. Now, they lauded the fact that they got to the train after the attack, we can definitely say that, in around 8 minutes. But we now learn that for about 24 hours, the man who has been arrested and charged with the attack on the train and in connection with the attack on the DLR in London had actually about 24 hours prior, gone into a barber's in Peterborough with a knife and behaved in a strange and aggressive fashion. There's also been reports of stabbing in the area as well, in Peterborough as well. LBC's reporter Shivani Sharma joins us from the hospital, where people have been admitted, of course, Addenbrookes in Cambridge. Shivani, good morning. No, Shivani Sharma, we'll try and get her back. Let's move to the other aspect, which is the fact that I understand that there's huge importance with climate change. I get all of that. But this attack took place on Saturday night. We've had all day Sunday. We've had all day Monday. Why has there not been a visit by the Home Secretary, the Prime Minister, the Deputy Prime Minister, or, one could argue, one of the royals? Let's talk to Gito Harry, former Downing Street Director of Communications, serving when Boris Johnson was Prime Minister. How is it determined, Gito, when there should be a high-level ministerial visit and when it can just be left to the local mayor or council leader or whoever it might be? Morning, Gito.
Good morning. It's always a little tricky, Nick, isn't it? Nobody wants to be seen to be exploiting, you know, somebody else's misfortune. There's a reason we use the term ambulance chaser sort of disparagingly. And I think it's quite hard to get the balance right between being seen to be just rocking up as a stunt versus occasions when you really ought to be there. And it's also slightly more complicated here because it happened on a train to people from different communities. It didn't happen to a village or to a suburb or to a venue, if you like. So yes, there's a number of people in the same hospital, and that lends itself. But hospital, really, you know, would you want Shabana Mahmood turning up at your bedside, Nick, if you were lying there sort of, you know, with a bad knife wound? Probably not. So on this one, I think, to be honest, they're probably right. What I do think, though, is we all know who the great hero of the hour was. There's many heroes here, but the man who literally put himself between the knife man and everybody else, whose hand is, you know, badly injured, and we've all seen his face, I think there's more that can be done there. I remember living in New York a few years ago. There's a man who very heroically saw somebody fall onto the track on the subway, and he jumped on top of her, and a train came into the station, and he pinned her down, lay on top of her, and the train went over them. The following day, he was next to Mayor Michael Bloomberg at the time at City Hall, being awarded the highest honor the mayor of New York could give. I think that's the sort of area where we should be thinking, how do we actually, you know, highlight to people this is the kind of heroism we applaud?
What about a royal visit, Gitto?
Again, where do they visit? Who do they see? Maybe in due course. I don't know. It is slightly tricky on this occasion. I know many, many years ago, the royals were criticized for not going to Aberfan, the village in South Wales where the mountain came down and killed a whole generation of kids very, very tragically. There's just been a major anniversary. And the Queen was rightly, the late Queen was rightly criticised for not going there. And Prince Philip, I think, did. And it was appreciated. I'm not sure where they would go. They could go to the hospital. But again, I think, you know, people in hospital with knife wounds, I'm not sure that would be appreciated, to be honest.
Gitto Harry, former Downing Street Director of Communications, serving when Boris Johnson was Prime Minister. Thank you. 9 after 7. Tom Slater is editor of Spiked Online. Let's pick up this line of inquiry with you. I mean, when they want to, I can see in my mind's eye Sir Keir Starmer walking around the hospital with his sleeves rolled up. I can see Jeremy Hunt, former health secretary, rolling around. They'll go to hospitals when they want to, Tom. Morning to you.
Morning. No, there is an element of damned if you do, damned if you don't. I mean, we all remember when the Grenfell atrocity happened and you had Theresa May head down there but still being booed as a consequence. Keir Starmer, is he a natural emoter in situations like this? Absolutely not. But I think when you have a politician, when you have a prime minister who is a little bit on the ropes, doesn't really have a lot of authority, it's quite easy to present them as unfeeling in situations like this. So will it make a hell of a lot of difference to the victims, as Gitto was saying? Almost certainly not. But I think it just underlines the sense that they don't have a sense of where the country is at, what they're concerned about. And it's just another stick with which to beat Keir Starmer, even though that's the last thing we should think of at times like this.
Do you not think the readers are Spiked Online? When they see photographs of the Prime Minister, he'll be in Brazil later, they'll say he should be in Cambridge, not Copacabana.
No, absolutely. And the fact that he's ended up at the COP summit, despite the fact that most of the leaders haven't, because of the fact that it's not even seen as a particular must-go-to, apart from the ones that in between times that people tend to attend, I think is telling. Keir Starmer has very huge difficulty sensing the mood of the nation, sensing what is important, and this is probably another example of that.
Lastly, I think they call it a disconnect, and I think you've absolutely put your finger on it. There is a disconnect with Sir Keir. He's obviously a very, very bright bloke, and he is. I've met him. He is a caring bloke. Why is there that disconnect, do you think, Tom?
Well, I think it comes down to just being able to sense the political weather, being able to sense what the big issues are in the country. I think it's very telling that the COP summit has risen up the agenda, whereas actually needing to be here at a time of maximum importance has fallen down. There is such a thing just being able to feel the pulse of the nation. I think Keir Starmer's always struggled to do that, and there's no one around him, more crucially, who can do that for him.
Tom Slater is editor of Spiked Online. Thanks for your input. So there's two questions there. Why no royal visit? And I understand, and I take what Tom said and I get what Gitto said, but come on, we've seen this in the past, horrific disasters where royals have visited. Indeed, train crashes, and I understand, again, it is a transient community on a train. They're not all from one particular town or village or city. I get all of that, but in my mind's eye, I can see royals and senior cabinet ministers in the years going, surely one of them, and it's not a good look, is it, if he's playing football on the Copacabana instead of being Addenbrooke's Hospital in Cambridge? Now, even without doubt, even more shocking is what would appear to be the series of opportunities missed to stop the alleged train slasher. Let's try again with Shivani Sharma, the LBC reporter at the hospital in Cambridge. Shivani, morning.
Good morning, Nick. There are two police cars parked up, security visible here at Addenbrooke's Hospital, a designated major trauma center.
I don't think we're going to get there, are we? I think the easiest way to do this is to, whatever that equipment is, to throw it in the river, and I'll just do it myself. So, police investigating the mass stabbing on a high-speed train in Cambridgeshire, examining four other knife incidents alleged to have taken place hours before passengers fled in terror on Saturday morning. Questions mount for police as to the way that they handle the incidents involving Anthony Williams, 32. Now, Williams appeared in court yesterday, charged with a series of attempted murders related to the two stabbing incidents. Just to give you a timeline of what went on, and this is why the questions have been asked. Very much a change in tack, by the way, now for the police, because I think initially, and understandably, it seemed that they had responded with extraordinary, this is BTP, of course, and the local police, British Transport Police, and the local police. They had responded with extraordinary alacrity, but now questions will be asked. So, again, you hear what the Home Secretary was saying, you heard what the Transport Secretary was saying yesterday, and you just wonder what the level of communications are. Why was no one telling the Home Secretary, telling the government, telling the Transport Secretary, who could then tell the Transport Secretary, let's just go easy on this alleged attacker on the train, because it looks as though he could have been out and about in London, and it looks as though he could have been out and about in Peterborough 24 hours. So let's tread lightly on all of that. This is the 24 hours that ended in train terror. I take you to 7:10 p.m. Friday. A 14-year-old boy is stabbed by a man with a knife in Peterborough city centre. Just 10, 15 minutes later in Fletton, which is a part of the city, excuse me, a man is seen waving a knife in a barbershop, goes in and behaves in an aggressive fashion. Video footage from that barbershop would seem to identify, I repeat, would seem to identify that man. And then, of course, 12:45 a.m. Saturday, the early hours, 45 minutes after midnight, we can say that Anthony Williams allegedly attacked a man with a knife at a DLR station in London. And then, of course, the rest we know. 6:25 p.m. on Saturday, the train departs for London's King's Cross. And at 7:39, Williams allegedly starts his assault and a knife attack on a series of passengers. Those missed chances have to be looked at. In other news, you know the BBC make much of their Verify unit. Here's one of their presenters, Clive Myrie.
Disinformation. You think you're winning.
There is no climate change.
Fooling people in the most sophisticated ways.
No, that's what the BBC is doing, as they are shown clearly to have exhibited bias in the way they edit his speeches concerning Donald Trump. We'll give you more on that after this. 7:15, LBC News Headlines, Dominic Ellis.
The Chancellor will deliver a speech in Downing Street later, setting out her priorities ahead of the budget later this month. Online pornography showing women being choked is to be made illegal, and the regulator Ofwat is due in court, accused of allowing water companies to overcharge customers. LBC weather, wet and windy for much of England and Wales, drier for northern Scotland and the south of England, feeling very mild, a high of 17 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. So lots of tunnels remain closed because of this ongoing technical problem. The Blackwall Tunnel's closed northbound and the Rotherhithe Tunnel is closed both ways. The A40's also closed both ways at the Hanger Lane underpass, and the Upper Thames Street Tunnel, which is the tunnel between Blackfriars Bridge and Southwark Bridge, is also closed because of a technical problem. Now elsewhere on the M25, there are severe delays anti-clockwise at Junction 24 at Potter's Bar. That's where a car has broken down. And also delays on the M25, but on the Surrey Street stretch clockwise to Junction 10 at the A3. It's following an accident and there are delays back to Junction 9 at Leatherhead. And on the trains, there are severe delays on the Elizabeth line between Shenfield and Whitechapel.
This is LBC.
It's finally happened. I found it.
Found what?
The perfect Mini. And it's part of the Mini Stock event.
The what now?
The Mini Stock event. Unmissable savings on in-stock models on top of existing offers. But I've got to move fast because when it's gone, it's gone.
Go get it, pal.
The Mini Stock event. Unmissable offers 6th to the 10th of November at your local Mini retailer. Available on new Mini Stock orders placed during the stock event and registered by 31st of December 2025. Visit mini.co.uk/stock event.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345-6060-973. LBC.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 991234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the journalism industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Molly, a journalism student in year 12.
Outside of the classroom, we run our own news platform called The Loop. I do a daily news bulletin and produce videos for socials. We learn everything we need to be a journalist and have even learned alongside the news team at Global.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
There's some naughty folks out there in cyberspace, and it can be tough to tell a legit deal from a dodgy one. That's why you need Bitdefender, your very own digital heavyweight, working silently behind the scenes to keep you and your devices safe. Whatever threats the web throws at you. Trusted by the experts, used by the pros.
Bitdefender, a global leader in cybersecurity. Trusted, always.
Verify now at bitdefender.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
19 minutes after 7, Colin, you're going to be the first caller. Let me quickly tell you what the headlines are saying. The Daily, I won't do all of them, just quickly run through a few. The Daily Mail quite rightly splits its front page and asks why the train knife suspect was free to roam. The other story on their front page is this Rachel Reeves speech, which for once is happening on our watch. The Mail saying that she, the Chancellor, will soften us up for tax increases. You'll hear it here, of course, on LBC. Don't touch that dial. The front page of the Times, a very, very powerful picture of the man who has been arrested and charged in connection with other events over that crucial 24-hour period. But here he is, storming into a barbershop in Peterborough with a very large knife. Police failed to catch rail suspect a day earlier. And very powerful front page of the Sun as well. Train suspect, and I hope the lawyers are listening, train suspect, quotes, knifed to before attack, close quotes. The other powerful story is the front page of the Daily Telegraph. I'm pleased to say we're going to be speaking with a journalist who cracked the story. It's a cracking story. BBC's Trump bias exposed in memo leak. And the joy of radio, we will be able to play it for you in reality, what Trump said, and then play you what's called the edit, the way the BBC decided to put it out. So much for their verify unit. I just call it the fabricate unit, really. It'd be far quicker. Another scandal at the door of the BBC. Quickly to the LBC app. They're looking ahead, chronologically, that is, chronologically, to that speech from Rachel Reeves. Tax rises now inevitable. And let's take one other one at random. Oh, it's all about the train story. Oh, here we are. Here we go. This is a nice picture on Sky News. There we are. Life's a beach. Prince William in Brazil this week, of course, as part of the COP summit. I note that the London mayor is there as well. Well, honestly, you've had reportedly or allegedly a man being attacked with a knife in East London. The best place to be is Rio de Janeiro when you think about that, isn't it? That'll help. Colin's in Newcastle. Colin, let's talk policing. Bit of a shambles here, possibly, isn't it? Good morning.
Good morning, mate. We swung before, you know.
I know, I recognise your name and I recognise your voice.
Yeah, ex-policeman. So
yes, sir, I know.
It's all possibly maybes. Look, the facts are simple. He's been charged. He's been charged with an incident previously. Is that correct? Two charges, as far as we're aware.
Yep.
So there was a precedent, and he was charged with that one. So what we're talking about is possibly maybes, and he could have done maybe blah, blah, blah. But the facts are simple. It's the policeman who turned up on the night did a good job.
I agree. But where was the alert? If it would appear the alleged perpetrator here had been wandering around Peterborough with a knife 24 hours earlier.
Possibly, maybe, yes.
Well, you've seen the video, Colin.
It's just, Nick, the guy was charged. The cops did their job. The previous incident was also charged. For once, Nick, please, I appreciate you're allegedly a police supporter. Actually, have you praised the police at all? Has the Daily Mail or the Sun put?
Praise the police, but also they have to be held to account, Colin.
Yes, they do have to be held. We're always held to account. But we're not. The trouble is, all we get is, the Daily Mail has not once said what a great job the police has done. All we've had for the last 15 years on the Conservatives and the right-wing media is, any chance, excuse to throw the police under the bus. We had a National Audit Office report published yesterday saying the workload's increasing, police numbers are falling, no one wants to join, we're struggling to get police on the street. And today, what we do, the Daily Mail doesn't thank the police, no one doesn't praise them at all. Let's have a go at the cops. And that's why cops are just leaving the jobs. You just get the police federation, they'll tell you the surveys. Look, it will be investigated, it will be locked up, but the facts are, he was charged with the incident on Peter, he was charged with the incident previously before. Let's praise the police. We of course, we need to look at it. We always do. We're always accountable. But sometimes it'll be nice if someone like yourselves would say, good job, chaps, well done, instead of just constantly, hey, let's just throw them under the bus and let's just kill the morale of the cops out there doing their job every day.
Point taken. You're right. Let's praise the bravery as well of BTP and Cambridgeshire Police, British Transport Police, who initially attended that shout, and then Cambridgeshire Police. Fantastic work. You're right. Let's get that out there. But I will reserve the right to, as some of the newspapers are, ask what happened for the preceding 24 hours. But I take on board what you say, Colin, and I always enjoy speaking with you, particularly about policing matters. We'll have more calls on that. 7:24. Now to the front page, I briefly mentioned the Daily Telegraph. Very powerful story, and you're going to be hearing from the journalist who wrote it. The BBC doctored a Donald Trump speech by making a appear to encourage the Capitol Hill riot, according to an internal whistleblowing memo seen by the newspaper. Well, let's just back up a little, don't we? Because at the moment, the BBC is making much of its so-called verify unit. Here's Clive Myrie.
Disinformation You think you're winning.
There's no climate change.
Fooling people in the most sophisticated ways.
Clive, you don't need to be a mastermind to work out you got this one wrong, haven't you? So here's what Donald Trump said back in 2021.
We're going to walk down to the Capitol. And we're going to cheer on our brave senators and congressmen and women.
And here's how it was portrayed in Panorama prior to the election in 2024.
We're going to walk down to the Capitol, and I'll be there with you. And we fight. We fight like hell.
My goodness. A primary school child could see the difference there. Gordon Rayner is associate editor of the Daily Telegraph. He's written the exclusive, joins me now. Gordon, why is this so significant, would you say? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Well, I think, as you rightly pointed out there, not only is the BBC's remit all to do with impartiality and trust, but they are running, as you've pointed out, a series of adverts at the moment, ironically, in which they talk about trust and how you can trust the BBC. And I'm afraid that what this shows is that there are times when you certainly can't trust the BBC, and that's not my words. That's the words of one of their own advisers who wrote a very lengthy letter to members of the BBC board, basically begging them to do something about this.
What was the position of the person who wrote that letter? And in brief, what did that letter say? And what was the BBC's response, Gordon?
So the letter was written by a chap called Michael Prescott, who was an independent advisor to the BBC's Editorial Guidelines and Standards Committee, which is effectively their sort of arbiter of impartiality. He did that job for 3 years. He left in June. He was so appalled at what he'd seen and at the BBC's complete refusal to do anything about it whenever bias cropped up that he wrote this 19-page letter setting out multiple examples of bias, not just over Trump, but as you'll be reading over the next hours and days, over the coverage of Gaza, over the coverage of transgender rights and various other things. And he said that they had manifestly misled viewers, that they had doctored that Trump video, and that when it was raised internally, they sort of shrugged and said, nothing to see here.
And what are the BBC saying now, Gordon?
Very little. They have said that they don't comment on leaks. And they've also said that Michael Prescott was a member of a committee where people have differing opinions.
The leader column in your newspaper, The Telegraph, talks about an institutional bias. Just give the listeners an overview of the points made in that piece.
Well, look, I think that the impression that you get when you read this this memo is of an organisation that's out of control now, where journalists and managers have an agenda rather than being impartial and protecting trust at all costs. They come to work with a world view that they want to promote, and I think that Panorama documentary was probably the most egregious example of that. They have, as we said, they've made it look as if Trump has said something he didn't. I would urge people to watch the video on our website, because you'll see that there's nothing to give you any clue that video has been edited. It's very, very slick. He says those two things. He says we're going to go to the Capitol, and then he says we're going to fight. He says those two things nearly an hour apart and in different contexts. And they've spliced them together to make it sound as if he said one fluent sentence, which he didn't say. And it completely changes the context, that changes the sense of what he's saying. And the other point I think it's important to make here is that after that clip was played in Panorama, that doctored clip, the next thing you see in that Panorama documentary is Proud Boys marching on the Capitol.
Yeah.
So that's given the very clear, unambiguous impression that he speaks, they march, there's a riot. What actually happened was that footage of the Proud Boys marching on the Capitol was filmed an hour before Trump spoke. So the truth is, they march, he speaks, he doesn't tell them to fight, he tells them people to go and protest peacefully, and then there's the riot. So it's completely different.
Great work by you, Gordon. Congratulations. Heck of a scoop. Gordon Rayner, Associate Editor of the Daily Telegraph. Full details in the paper. And, of course, as I say, a Leader article as well. 7:29. Sebastian's in Harrow. Your reaction to this? They've been caught completely with their cans in the cookie jar on this one, haven't they? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick, and it's great to talk to you. But I actually remember seeing the whole of that that video when Trump was actually making that speech, and as it was happening live on CNN, he did say both of those things. They were not hours apart.
They were. You've just heard from the journalist who's watched the tape, Sebastian. I don't know a lot about journalism, but I know you can't lift something somebody says an hour later and clag it onto the thing he says now and pretend it's justified. That's not allowed.
That's not allowed, I agree. But
well, that's what they've done, sir.
But Trump actually did say both of those things continuously, i.e. contiguously as well.
No, not the impression that tape gives. I've listened very carefully there. I'm not pretending I've watched all the panorama, I haven't, but I've watched carefully that part of the tape. It is totally incorrect impression that the BBC have sought to give of Mr. Trump. Totally incorrect, Sebastian.
I am in agreement with you there.
Okay, sir.
But Trump did actually say that I will be with you, and he did actually say that straight after he mentioned that.
But here's the difference. If that was in print, the old trick, you put dot, 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 so it shows that it's not continuous. So let's go and do this, let's go and fight, dot, 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 I will be with you, whatever. What you can't do in what's called audio is pick it up and make it look as though it's untouched in reality what he said. Sebastian, you and I are briefly on the same page. I wish you a safe day. Thanks. We have to get a move on because we're already late to the news and there are other stories. What are we, one day away from bear, one day away from bonfire night, and now we learn that the tragedy of the baby who was killed by the family dog, the dog was possibly spooked by fireworks. Assistant Chief Constable Vicky Townsend's with Gwent Police.
Our officers attended a report of an attack by a family dog in an address in Crosthwaite, Rodgett, around 6 p.m. on Sunday, the 2nd of November. A 9-month-old baby boy was pronounced dead at the scene.
Fireworks, definitely fun, but could they be fatal? Is it time for a ban? 7:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC. News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
The Chancellor will deliver a speech from Downing Street shortly, setting out her priorities ahead of the budget. Speculation is increasing that Rachel Reeves could raise taxes later this month to repair the public finances. Online pornography showing women being choked is to be made illegal after a review found such images are rife on websites. The measures are part of government plans to tackle violence against women and girls. And the regulator Ofwat is due in court later, accused of allowing water companies to overcharge customers. The legal challenge is being brought by the campaign group River Action. LBC weather, wet and windy for much of England and Wales, drier for northern Scotland and southern England, feeling very mild, a high of 17 degrees.
Trains are three bridges for two adults, one skeleton and one fairy werewolf, as you do.
Just one pump gauge, kids! Charlie, not that one, mate. It's nearly as big as you.
Back on the train with two little monsters and a couple of pumpkins. Now off home to spend a good 3 hours carving. Download the Thameslink Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story.
Amazon has increased funding for employees to £3,000 a year every year for career development. Like Juliet, she's now a trained technician. And to her, the sound of machinery in need of repair reminds her of how far she's come. In 2 years, she's landed her dream job, providing her with valuable skills. That's up to £3,000 every year for career development at Amazon. Eligibility conditions apply.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it. And there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
7:34, come back to your calls, Andrew. We're going to talk to you about the policing operation in and around Huntingdon and Peterborough. But let's get into the world of finance, and it's a big day. I remind you, we're expecting the Chancellor to speak at around 10 minutes after 8, and we will take it here live. But what might we be about to hear? It's the front page of many of your newspapers, not least City AM. And its editor, Christian May, joins me now. What are we going to hear in under an hour? Christian, morning.
Good morning to you, Nick. This is highly unusual. Really not that long ago, the convention in the build-up to the budget was that the government would enter a period of self-imposed purdah and you wouldn't talk about it. Well, that approach is out of the window. Not only is the Chancellor going to talk about it, she's going to set the scene and certainly lay the groundwork to sort of justify the sort of decisions and policies she's almost certainly going to announce in 3 weeks' time. And I'll stress that again. The budget itself is in 3 weeks' time. The speech this morning, very unusual, from Downing Street, addressing the nation, if you like, to explain, as she will put it, the choices and principles behind the decisions that she's going to have to make. She's talked about this having to be a budget based on fairness. And she's also talking about the context as she sees it. And she was echoed in that by the Prime Minister, who addressed Labour MPs in private last night. And we understand he made the case to them that the economic situation is worse even than we feared, which is precisely what they said this time last year when they came into office. And they very theatrically talked about opening the books and discovering a black hole and how they had to therefore do that once in a lifetime £40 billion tax raid, the raid that the Chancellor insisted that should never come back and never have to do again. She's about to do it again. And she's going to say that this is because the economy is just generally poorer than we thought because of Brexit, because of COVID, because of austerity. She's going back quite a long time to find these excuses. She's not wrong, by the way, to point out that the economy is struggling, that growth and productivity have been poor for about 20 years. But I'm afraid she can't absolve herself of the blame. And I think it tests our patience and stretches credulity to suggest nearly 18 months into office and a year after her first budget that they've looked again and discovered things are really bad and she's going to have to raise taxes again. Taxes will be going up, 20 billion, 30 billion people talk about. She seems to be laying the groundwork for certainly some sort of changes to income tax and the sorts of taxes that she said she wasn't going to touch. And I'll just make this observation. I think that you could understand her rationale here. She doesn't want to have to come back every year and say, oh, it's a bit gloomy again, I'm going to have to find a few more billion every year. She's going to take this opportunity, I think what the phrase is, lean in to the situation as she sees it and as the Prime Minister sees it and say, we can't just tinker. We're going to have to make some really serious changes and probably try and make some sort of political virtue out of the fact that she's got no choice. And others will argue that this is self-inflicted, but this is what she's going to try and set out this morning.
Rachel Reeves shares the front page of your paper today with Nigel Farage. What's the story about him?
Well, sticking with the economy and political leadership. Nigel Farage gave a speech in the city yesterday in Banking Hall, very glamorous Art Deco venue. I thought I recognised it. It's where I had my wedding reception. We had more fun, I can assure you of that. Farage set out his plans to be responsible and be mature and run away from the £90 billion worth of fairly heady tax cuts that he previously promised. He says the economy simply couldn't bear it, that we have to focus on shrinking the state, on cutting public spending first, and once we get that done, then we can move into the sorts of radical tax cuts that he wants to see. He obviously wants to avoid being labelled a kind of Liz Truss 2.0 with his fairly reckless spending and tax plans, as had been described by experts. So this is about him seeing off those attacks, not least from the Tories, who sense Farage is very vulnerable on the economy. He says this is the sensible, mature and responsible approach.
Other news, what are O2 up to?
Well, they've somewhat annoyed the government, and I dare say they might annoy some of their customers. The government's asked the media regulator to look into the rules that they changed, I think, just last year, on phone companies raising their prices in the middle of a contract, because O2 have said suddenly that they're going to raise their contract by £2.50 a month, or about 8p a day. The Technology Secretary, Liz Kendall, says this is against the spirit of the rule change that they introduced that said that phone providers aren't allowed to do mid-contract price rises. O2 have got away with it. They found a way of doing it that doesn't breach those rules, they say. But the government wants the regulator to look into this and put some pressure on O2 to explain themselves. For their part, O2 say, look, we have to keep investing fortunes into the infrastructure, into the next generation infrastructure for these services. services, and it's not a tremendous amount of money. And I suppose, you know, there are other companies out there who make their main selling point being that they will never do mid-contract price rises. So if you're desperately unhappy with what O2 are about to do, they have given you a way out of your contracts if you commit to paying off the cost of your handset, that is.
And lastly, we've only just dealt with Halloween, but what is normally the juggernaut of Christmas ads is out today. It features the 1990 hit Where Love Lies. It's all about nostalgia, is that right? What are you picking up as the substance of the ad? Christian?
Yes, 'tis the season, certainly that time of year for John Lewis. I believe this is the 18th year of their sort of blockbuster Christmas ad campaign. I had a quick watch of their offering this morning, and it's, I suppose, designed to appeal to a man of a certain age, with perhaps children of a certain age, some sort of surly teenager who looks like he lives in his bedroom, comes downstairs and discovers his dad's opened his present, and it's a nice record from his father's youth, and they bond over it. And that's very nice, I suppose. Certainly makes more sense to me than was it last year they did those sort of Christmas Venus flytraps.
Oh, yeah.
But John Lewis, of course, they do like to sort of lean into their own ads, so I think they're going to go big on vinyl, they're going to go big on that as a sort of experience in store. Yes, it is, what, early, 4th of November.
I know.
And this is, I suspect now, not the last time that you and I will be discussing the big Christmas advert campaigns from these retailers.
Yeah, John Lewis joins Kevin the Carrot and the Christmas Grinch from Asda. Christian May, thank you. And you're not the Christmas Grinch, of course. Christian May is editor-in-chief at City AM, anything but a Christmas Grinch. We'll chart those Christmas ads as they come about. 7:40 is the time. Andrew's in Lanark. To come back to the questions being asked about Cambridgeshire police because of the reports that the alleged train slasher was active with a knife 24 hours prior. Andrew, what do you want to tell us? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Good to speak to you again.
Good to have you on, sir.
Not very good circumstances, obviously, but...
Shocking.
Right, I was a little bit busy a few minutes ago reversing a vehicle, but I heard a guy on, I think he was ex-police.
Colin in Newcastle. Yeah, ex-police, ex-job, yeah.
Right. With the greatest of respect to that guy, he jumped on about the police being bashed again and all the rest of it. I'm a former police officer. I've attended incidents not a million miles away from this, some worse. It's not good enough. They missed, from what I can see, I've not read it all, but I think there was about three opportunities that they missed. This particular incident was reported on the phone and... somewhere like 7:39, and at 7:44, when that driver got the train to a good spot, the police were there waiting, and they dealt with him. That's how the response should go. The problem is not the police on the ground, it's whoever's controlling and grading those calls. All calls are graded. Now, that was an immediate response, yes. And they have to respond, or it used to be in my day, within 10 minutes. Those are the calls that the police missed, the one particularly in the barber shop. If somebody phones up and says there's a man with a knife in a barber shop being aggressive, that, I would say, is an immediate by anybody's standard.
So your ex-job, it was 18 minutes before 18 the police minutes got to the barbers.
Right, and that, to me, sums up the whole problem with the police right now. They are not the force, well, they're not allowed to be called a force now, we're called a service now. They're obviously social workers, mental health professionals, they're everything. But they're not. Incidents like that, they're a police force. Go there, be forceful. He's got no rights. He forfeits.
Yeah, so that's all right, we can say that. But the attackers, you will know as a former officer, Andrew, you are right. But those 18 minutes to attend, you would have thought, as you rightly say, Andrew, hi, I'm in a barber's and there's a guy running around aggressively shouting threats with a large knife. 18 minutes before you get there. Andrew, thanks for your input. Look after yourself, ex-police, 7:43. Let's come to other matters which also involve the police. This tragedy of the child, the 9-month-old baby boy who was attacked and effectively mauled by the family dog. An update from the police. Assistant Chief Constable Vicky Townsend's with Gwent Police.
Our officers attended a report of an attack by a family dog in an address in Crosthwaite, Rodditt, around 6 p.m. on Sunday, the 2nd of November. A 9-month-old baby boy was pronounced dead at the scene by personnel from the Welsh Ambulance Service. The family of the child had been supported by dedicated officers. The dog was sedated and removed from the property and taken to a vet where it was put down.
Subsequently been reported the family dog was agitated by fireworks let off at a nearby recreation field just minutes before the attack. Catherine Alderson is spokesperson for the firework campaign. What is the drive? What is the ambition of the firework campaign? Good morning.
Good morning.
What is the campaign about?
Basically, a situation with fireworks over the sort of last decade plus has just become extremely antisocial for people living in towns and areas where they go off for extensive periods of time, and they're extremely noisy, intrusive. So we have been trying to put some extra pressure onto our government to make some changes that will work, basically to make them less intrusive on people's daily lives.
How would you want to change the fireworks?
Well, fundamentally, whichever way you change, and there's always going to be somebody that's not happy with those changes, whether, you know, you did a total ban, whether you reduced the decibels, et cetera, et cetera. So it's very difficult to determine which way is the best way to go, because there's always going to be somebody affected in some way. So as a campaign group, what we are asking is local businesses and charities, etc., that are interested in helping us on our endeavours to join AFLR, which is basically assisting all the other charities like RSPCA, Red Wings, etc., in their endeavours, because they are able to speak to the government directly.
Sorry, what does AFLR stand for?
And now you've caught me off on hot.
Oh, I'm
there.
So sorry. I wouldn't have asked. Okay. It's anti-firework something or other. Is it an organisation? Is it against fireworks?
Yeah.
So ultimately, do you want to see them? Do you want to see them banned? Ultimately.
If I was talking from a personal perspective, I would like to see that the public don't have access to fireworks, just purely because they're explosives, they're dangerous, and unfortunately not everybody is responsible enough to behave with them appropriately.
Grateful for your time. It's the Association for Firework Legislation Reform you were trying to find. Catherine Alderson, thank you. You are a spokesperson for the firework campaign. It is, of course, bonfire night tomorrow night, although fireworks have been going off around, I think some have possibly, of course, to celebrate Diwali. We have to make that to point as well. So we celebrate Diwali there, but there is a bonfire night tomorrow. Nothing like as big as it used to be decades ago when I was a child. But as the report comes in that the dog was spooked by fireworks, how nervous are you for your dog, your cat, possibly other animals? I don't know if you've got horses, whatever it might be, particularly if they're out in a field and the fireworks start whizzing around. Firework night tomorrow. Should we now be looking at some kind of legislation? I don't think we should ban them. They are, with the exception, of course, of this tragedy, a lot of people get a lot of enjoyment out of them. We'll take more on that. 7:46 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The Chancellor will deliver a speech from Downing Street shortly, setting out her priorities ahead of the budget later this month. Online pornography showing women being choked is to be made illegal, and the government is calling on Ofcom to revisit rules on mobile phone companies raising their prices mid-contract. LBC weather, wet and windy for much of England and Wales, drier for northern Scotland and southern England, feeling very mild, a high of 17 degrees.
Tonight with Andrew Marr from 6 p.m.
What does the Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, really think about the mess she got into over renting her house? In the first broadcast interview she's given since then, I'll bring you an exclusive answer at 6 tonight.
Tonight with Andrew Marr from 6 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
At Morrison's, we've been stocking up on a Christmas favourite, so you can buy a box of 24 Ferrero Rocher for just £5.50 with your more card. It wouldn't be Christmas without them. Morrison's, making more of Christmas. Majority of stores, offers and prices may vary online, and Morrison's daily more card at app required. £18 plus £11 without more card ends 16th of November.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 ow. Well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station.
Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe. Only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
When you buy a BMW-approved used electric car, there are no surprises. You'll find the largest range and the widest choice. Naturally. Every car has been meticulously checked by qualified BMW technicians. Hardly a plot twist. And they always come with a battery health report and at least 12 months unlimited mileage BMW warranty. Just as you'd expect. BMW approved used electric cars. Nothing new here. Search BMW approved used electric. Obviously.
At TfL, we're helping make roads safer. We're continuing to roll out lower speed limits because 20 miles per hour roads have already seen 24% fewer collisions causing death or serious injury. We're also improving junctions to help keep you safe and improving visibility for our bus drivers with new wing mirror cameras. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Comparison of collisions data before and after implementation of 20 miles per hour speed limit.
I'm telling you, raise taxes, that's how.
Cut spending, less waste, more sense.
Move north, get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
Up to 9.13% annual return. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest property-backed from £500. Visit cufflink.com. That's K-U-F-L-I-N-K. Register your interest today. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to IF ISAs and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's talk fireworks in the light of the news that that baby who was mauled to death by the family dog, reportedly the dog was spooked by fireworks. Karen says, I'm in Lewes, which is in Sussex, walking my dog. I usually let him off the lead, but already this morning the bangs are going off. It's probably hijinks with kids who don't understand the impact it can have on animals. Dean Blackman says, I moved to Ireland 2 years ago. Fireworks are banned here. Fireworks are worse here than they are in the UK. Children as young as 10 can get hold of them. Same subject. Marie says there needs to be a petition about banning fireworks. This one comes from David in Norfolk. It's strange we can buy fireworks, a potential small bomb to attack people, but we can't buy pepper spray to protect ourselves. Nish in Stockport. Nish, where would you be on fireworks? They can be tremendous fun and great to watch. Good morning.
Hello, good morning, Nick. First of all, really tragic about that, that poor baby. Horrible. I'm all in favour of a ban, and I was just saying to your colleague there, we obviously see the direct impact on dogs, or as your previous guest said, on humans, because we obviously are, you know, that's what we see in our households. We don't even see the impact on animals for whom the sky is actually their home. The nocturnal birds, the bats, you know, insects. Imagine how disorienting it must be for them to have the world around them literally exploding, banging noises.
Right.
It must be completely interfering with their circadian rhythms and their hunting patterns and everything.
But it's been happening for years and it brings tremendous enjoyment, as long as they're done professionally, carefully and not irresponsibly, to thousands and thousands of people, Nish. Are we here for people or here for bats?
Well, you know, I've heard similar obviously this is a much greater extreme, but I've heard similar arguments from some of my Spanish friends about bullfighting, saying that this is our culture, it's been going on for a very long time. But ultimately, if something is harmful to animals or harmful to the environment, we have to, that has to take priority over whether something is a cultural tradition. Things have to adapt with the times, I'm afraid.
But if you use your example, the bull can't go anywhere. He is trapped in a bull ring. The bat just flies to another part of the town where there's no fireworks.
Yeah, but a bat is such a tiny animal. We have no idea the psychological impact or anything that has on the bat going forward. There's no way for us to know that, but I can't imagine that they are particularly thrilled by that. And it's not particularly something necessary that we need to do. There's so many other forms of entertainment. You know, there's, like you said, bonfires and things like that we can do instead.
Right. Right, OK, well, let's see if others agree. I know a lot of children love their fireworks, and I can hear your concerns for the psychological or emotional well-being of a bat, but it's which is more important. Let's see what others make of it. Nish, thank you. George, you're asking, do we have the breed of the dog? No, police are still investigating, so I can't give you the definitive breed. I would have done it, because, remember, we try and give you as many facts as we possibly can. We told you where it happened, we told you what happened, we told you the age of the baby. But we don't have the definitive breed of the dog, and if we get it, at least during this morning, I will be sure to tell you. We might take more calls on fireworks, but let's go to another story, which is the concern now, and indeed calls for a public inquiry into what is called victims of a silent scandal pregnancy drug. Now, Amanda Latham is spokesperson for DES Justice UK and joins us now to explain more. Can I ask you to say what, tell us what DES stands for? It's the drug that was prescribed. How do you pronounce this?
Hi, Nick. Thanks for having me on the show.
Not at all.
It's diethylstilbestrol.
Right.
Or it's been used with, it's also known as stilbestrol.
Right. Okay.
And DES is the short word for it.
And this was given to pregnant women from around 1940, excuse me, from 1940 through to the 1970s. Why was the drug prescribed, Amanda? Do you know?
It was prescribed for a number of reasons. One of the reasons was for ladies that had a lot of miscarriages. It's a synthetic form of oestrogen, so they, excuse me,
sorry,
they thought that it would help them deliver a healthy baby. And it was given for the all-round general health. You know, of, they thought it was just a general good for the all-round health of the baby as well.
And what is it now feared the drug was doing? What was it actually causing?
Well, it, over the years, it turned out that it was a carcinogenic, which means that it could cause cancer. Very, very rare cancers in women, vaginal and cervical. A cancer called clear cell adenocarcinoma, which is what I had when I was age 9.
And it's your belief then that it, this was due to your mother being prescribed the drug, is that right?
Possibly my mother, but maybe my grandma as well, because it passes down the generations. And this is what the fear is, because I've got two children now, and, you know, we don't know whether it can pass on to my children or their children and even beyond. We just don't know, because it seems it's never-ending.
Do we have any idea, Amanda, how big a group of women we might be talking about here?
Well, it has been said that there was, in the UK, there was approximately 300,000 people, women, that were given this drug. Now, if you think about that amount of women, they've gone on to have children.
Of course.
Their children have gone on to have children.
Yeah.
So you're talking in the millions, really, the possibility.
What do you want to see? What do you and your colleagues at DES Justice UK, what do you want to see happen now?
Well, we want a public inquiry because the government were warned about this. I'm not sure exactly when they were warned about it. I think it was something like 1971. They were asked to stop it being administered.
Mm-hmm.
The government said that they sent a letter to hospitals, doctors, but this letter was never found. And it's to my understanding that this letter actually wasn't sent at all.
Right.
So they've let everybody down, really. It's carried on for years and years when it should have stopped.
And have you had any response?
10 years previous.
Have you had any response? Have you had any response from this or any previous government?
I'm not sure, to be honest. Yes, we have had a response. We're at Westminster today, launching the campaign.
Right.
So we will be. Unfortunately, I can't be there because I've had an operation on Friday. So
right.
I did want to be there. But yeah, the campaign's being launched today. It has been acknowledged by, you know, the health secretary. He is looking into it, and we are fighting to get an investigation.
Good luck with your work, with your petition today. Amanda Latham, thank you. You're a spokesperson for DES Justice UK. Taking us to 2 minutes before eight is the time. Let's get one call in before we go to the news on this concern over fireworks. Kirsty's in Surbiton. Kirsty, some people saying they need to be banned. Where are you on that? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, please ban them. They seem to last now from sometime in October all the way to New Year's Eve, and it's too much. I've got a dog who's terrified. taken him to the vets umpteen times. I've tried to drug him before, and that is just awful, seeing a dog really drugged up because of this. It's too long and it's too intense for them. It's horrible.
What does it do to your dog? How does the dog's anxiety show itself?
He's panting, he's pacing, he refuses to go outside because he's frightened. And sitting with us, he just paws and scratches. We try to cocoon him.
He has to
come up to our room. He's nearly 10 and he's not alone. It's awful.
That's awful. And that's every... Mm. So I imagine they start around Diwali and take us all the way through November as well.
That's correct. Well, to New Year, I think. It's almost impossible to take him outside.
And was he like this as a pup?
No, it's got progressively worse as he's got older, and it's horrible, really horrible.
And then soothing music, nothing like that helps the dog?
Nothing helps at all, and it's awful. And the worst thing is, we know they're coming because he can hear them before us. So he'll start to get agitated, panting, pacing, and he's heard them before we can even hear them. So, you know, also we don't go out much, but we have to stay in. We couldn't leave him in his own at the moment.
Kirsty, good luck with the dog. Thank you for that. We're going to have a trying night, certainly tomorrow night, but I wish your dog well, poor thing. All right, the music means we must move on. And in the coming hour, you are going to be hearing from Chancellor Rachel Reeves. Here she is speaking about a bit of a grim forecast last month.
Challenges are being thrown our way, but I won't duck those challenges. Of course, we're looking at tax and spending as well, but numbers will always add up with me as Chancellor.
Talk about numbers. What about 9, 9 and 9?
909, what's your emergency?
You will be astonished to hear as the Met complain about people calling them, in some instances, to ask where their fast food delivery is. We'll tell you that later in the hour. And the idea that some schools now are closing at 2:30 in the afternoon is in the sights of the Education Secretary. I'll talk to you about your school days. But the 8 o'clock news on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, the Chancellor is expected to address growing speculation about further tax rises to come later this month. Rachel Reeves is due to make her speech in the next few minutes, just 3 weeks before her budget. Number 10 has repeatedly refused to recommit to Labour's manifesto promise not to raise income tax. LBC's political editor Natasha Clark is in Downing Street.
The Chancellor is expected to send a message today that hard choices are coming in this budget. We know we've got weak growth, high borrowing and poor productivity. The economy just isn't in a good state right now, and she faces very difficult decisions to fill that black hole.
Shadow Working Pension Secretary Helen Whateley has told LBC that Labour can't blame the Tories for the state of the economy.
Rachel Reeves is in a situation of her own making. She has created this problem. She has made this mess by the dreadful budget that she did a year ago, which killed growth. They talked down the economy. They put up the tax on jobs, which has been a disaster for business.
And you can hear the Chancellor's speech live here on LBC in the next few minutes. In other news this morning, investigations are continuing into whether a man accused of a stabbing attack in Cambridgeshire is linked to other knife offences. Anthony Williams, who's 32, is charged with the attempted murder of 10 people on a train on Saturday. Police are now also looking into 3 other reports of a man with a knife in Peterborough on Friday night. Online pornography showing women being choked is to be made illegal after a review found such images are rife on websites. The measures are part of the government's plans to tackle violence against women and girls. Avanti West Coast says there's likely to be disruption on its rail network until tomorrow after yesterday's landslide in Cumbria. It caused a train to derail near the village of Shap yesterday morning. 4 people suffered minor injuries. And the government's called for Ofcom to revisit its rules on mobile phone companies raising their prices mid-contract. The technology secretary has written to the regulator after O2 announced last week that it's to increase prices by more than originally promised. Liz Kendall says the rise is disappointing and goes against the spirit of the regulations. O2 hasn't broken any rules as the price rises are linked to inflation. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 reopened at 97.01. It closed down 16 yesterday. The pound buys $1.31 and €1.14. LBC weather, wet and windy for much of England and Wales today. Drier for northern Scotland and the south of England. Feeling very mild, a high of 17 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Yeah, the radiator's making a gurgling noise.
That's not a noise. It's a cry for help.
Talk to me. Is it your balancing? Is it trapped air from barometric pressure shifts? I see. Uh-huh.
Right. A simple flush and some inhibitor fluid will fix it in no time.
Our tradespeople understand what your home needs this winter. Download the Checkatrade app and book a Checkatrade approved tradesperson who'll agree costs up front with honest communication. Checkatrade, a job done right. Checkatrade, checkatrade.com.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 4 minutes after eight, Tuesday the 4th of November. Ahead of bonfire night, some fireworks from the Chancellor should be speaking. It is reported in a little over 5 minutes' time. That's laying the ground for tax rises. We'll obviously bring you that live and full analysis. Meanwhile, in other news, what is the percentage of calls to the Met, London's Metropolitan Police, that are non-emergency, do you imagine? What would it be? Or what are the ones that, I should say, are valid? What are the ones that are valid? I'll tell you that after we give you an example of a ridiculous call to the police.
Hello, you're through to the police.
I want to know the time. The time.
You want to know the time?
The time.
Right, but you've rung on 999, the emergency line, for the police?
That, of course, could stop someone getting through who is trying to report a knife attack, trying to report someone breaking into their house or into their car or whatever it might be. Of the calls that come to the Met, 15% are genuine emergencies. 15. That's 15 in under. That's 1.5 in every 10. That is shocking. Were you not taught as a child you only ring 999 in extremis? We'll look at that. Plus, if you are at school or if your children are at school, what time does school finish?
School day usually ends at 2:30 p.m. The Academy Trust have proposed to extend the day from finishing at 2:30 p.m. to 3 p.m. That's 30 minutes gained that could be added to much-needed breaks.
We didn't get out until 4 o'clock. That's a social media posted by the union, the NASUWT, one of the largest teaching unions. I'll ask you, when did your school day end, when you were at school, and what about your children's school day, as now they seem to think that going to three is a bridge too far.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
What might we expect in about 5 minutes' time? Here's Chancellor Rachel Reeves speaking last month, indicating tax rises and spending cuts could be on the way.
Challenges are being thrown our way, but I won't duck those challenges. Of course, we're looking at tax and spending as well, but numbers will always add up with me as Chancellor.
Let's turn first to Duncan Weldon, an economist, former advisor on economic policy to the Labour Party, wrote the book Blood and Treasure, The Economics of Conflict from the Vikings to Ukraine, joins me now. Put the historian's hat on, if you would, as well as your economist's hat, Duncan. We are undoubtedly in bleak times, but is it unmatched over the last 30, 40, 50 years? What would you say historically? Good morning.
Good morning. I mean, I would say, you know, at the moment, you know, usually when we're talking about bad economic times, we're talking about crisis. We're talking about, you know, when inflation soared after Russia invaded Ukraine. We're talking about the pandemic, about when sterling crashed in value after the Brexit referendum. After, you know, thinking about the banking crisis 2008, 2009. What we have now is bad, but it's not this sort of acute crisis. Rather, it's a slower burning economic problem. It's the simple fact that for the last decade or so, our economy has only been growing about 1.5 percentage points a year. Whereas 20 years ago, we used to grow 2.5-3 percentage points. And it's not an economic car crash at the moment. It's more an economic puncture, slowing us down, causing all sorts of problems.
How do you get growth? What are the levers you can pull?
Well, that's the really big question, isn't it? I mean, you know, there's lots of things you could try. You could try and increase, you know, government spending on big infrastructure projects, on upgrading our infrastructure, making it better. That takes a long time. You could try cutting taxes on small businesses that create employment. You could try what the government is trying, which is just having a bit of stability, of saying rather than having three or four prime ministers in 5 years of constantly chopping and changing the rules, we're going to have this stable environment for business. That was the government's big pitch. But here we are, 18 months in, You know, we were told that last year was the big budget that was going to make all of the big tax rises, and then it was going to be stable. Here we are a year later, looking at another round of tax rises, because fundamentally what's happened is the Office of Budget Responsibility, which does the forecasts for the government, which says how things are going with government spending, whether we're on track to hit rules, they have been persistently too optimistic about the future. And it looks like they're now going to say, OK, we're going to say the future is going to look more like the present. This sort of growth of 1.5% a year is going to continue. Things aren't going to get better. And that puts a hole of 20 to 25 billion pounds in the government spending plans, a hole they've got to fill through either spending cuts or tax rises. Today, it seems the Chancellor is leaning on tax rises, starting to sort of, you know, put down some markers as to the kind of taxes that are going to go up at the end of this month.
Duncan Weldon, economist, you wrote Blood and Treasure, The Economics of Conflict from the Vikings to Ukraine. Thank you for your time. 9 after 8. Let's get Andrew Lillico, who's Executive Director and Principal of Europe Economics and columnist with The Telegraph. We're already hearing from the Conservatives that they, Labour, are the authors of their own misfortune from last year's budget. How fair a charge is that, would you say? Good morning.
Well, I would say at least 50% of the problem was the Conservatives themselves. So they had raised spending very high already, particularly in the period after the pandemic. Labour, of course, has taken it much higher. If you talk about factors that might...
Andrew, I'll come back to you. Let's hear the Chancellor. Andrew Lillico, thank you.
My budget, led by this government's values of fairness and opportunity, and focused entirely on the priorities of the British people. Protecting our NHS, reducing our national debt, and improving the cost of living. There is a lot of speculation about the choices that I will make. I understand that. These are important choices that will shape the future of our country for years to come. I want people to understand the circumstances we are facing, the principles guiding my choices, and why I believe they will be the right choices for our country. We are a country with considerable economic strengths, an open trading economy, a global hub for cutting-edge industries from AI to biotech, with world-leading universities and scientific institutions, and a talented and a committed workforce. But years of economic mismanagement has limited our country's potential, with long-term issues continually unchecked and potential unrealised. At the budget last year, I fixed the foundations, dealing with the aftermath of Liz Truss's disastrous mini-budget and the £22 billion black hole in the public finances left by the previous government. I put our public finances back on a firm footing, provided an urgent cash injection into our faltering public services, and began rebuilding our economy. But since that budget, the world has thrown even more challenges our way. The continual threat of tariffs has dragged on global confidence, deterring business investment and dampening growth. Inflation has been too slow to come down, as supply chains continue to be volatile, meaning the costs of everyday essentials remain too high. And the cost of government borrowing has increased around the world, a shift that Britain, with our high levels of debt left by the previous government, has been particularly exposed to. And in an uncertain world, we also face pressure to increase our defence spending, and it is right that we do that, protecting ourselves from hostile actors and supporting our allies. And there are other pressures on the public finances. The Prime Minister, the Secretary of Work and Pensions, and this whole government are committed to reforming our welfare state so that it is not a system that counts the costs of failure, but one that invests in success and protects those who need it most. There is nothing progressive about refusing to reform a system that is leaving 1 in 8 young people out of education or employment. So we have begun the job of creating a system that protects people who cannot work and empowers those who can. And there are longer term challenges too. feeling, shared by millions of people across the country, that the economy isn't working as it should. Alongside the budget this month, the Office of Budget Responsibility, the UK's public finance watchdog, will set out the conclusions of their review of the supply side of the UK economy. I will not preempt those conclusions, but it is already clear that the productivity performance that we inherited from the last government is weaker than previously thought. A less productive economy is one that produces less output per hour worked. That has consequences for working people, for their jobs, and for their wages. And it has consequences for the public finances too, in lower tax receipts. It's not a question of how hard people work. Poor productivity means that we're putting in more, but getting out less. It means too many businesses and workers don't have the tools that they need. Trains that run on time, broadband that's fast and reliable, access to new technologies, or proper training so people have the right skills for the job. For a long time, commentators have talked about Britain's productivity puzzle. But it's not a puzzle. The causes of our economic underperformance are well understood. The chronic stop-go cycle of public investment has left us with roads full of potholes, high energy prices, and unstable conditions for vital business investment in skills and technology. And long-term failure to invest in our regions has built growth on a narrow base, with some parts of the country forging ahead while others fall behind. The truth is that previous governments have not adequately faced up to these challenges. Too often, political convenience has been prioritised over economic imperative. The decision to pursue a policy of austerity after the financial crisis dealt a hammer blow to our economy, gutting our public services and severing the flows of investment that would have put our country on a path to recovery. The years that followed were characterised by instability and indecision, with crucial capital investment continually sacrificed and hard decisions put off again and again. And then a rushed and ill-conceived Brexit that brought further disruption, as businesses trying to trade were faced with extra costs and extra paperwork. All this meant that when the pandemic arrived, our country was underprepared, our public services weakened and our economy fragile. And we finished the pandemic with higher death rates and higher debt than our peers. This isn't about relitigating old choices. It's about being honest with the people about the consequences that those choices have had. It is my job to deal with the world as we find it, not the world that I might wish it to be. Not to commentate or to speculate, but to act. In my Mays lecture last year, I set out our plan for solving our productivity problem through a programme of stability, investment and reform. And when I became Chancellor, I began to put that plan into action, stabilising our public finances, making the tax and spending decisions to get debt down and to fund our public services sustainably, changing the fiscal rules to increase public investment by £120 billion over the course of this Parliament, and crowding in private investment too, for road and for rail, for housing and nuclear power, and reforming our economy, ripping up the planning rules so we can build housing and infrastructure right across the country, bringing the brightest and the best to our shores with a new visa regime, and signing trade deals with the EU, the US and India to help businesses export around the world. We've begun to see the results of those plans in falling interest rates and falling NHS waiting lists, in rising wages and rising investment. But I know that real progress takes time. Our growth was the fastest in the G7 in the first half of this year. I don't expect anyone to be satisfied with growth of 1%. I'm not, and I know that there is more to do. The first part of our planning reforms will add an additional £6.8 billion to the size of our economy in the next 5 years. But the next part our planning bill must complete its passage through Parliament before it can make a difference. Interest rates, which rose from 0.1% to 5.25% in the last Parliament, have now been cut five times. But at 4%, they are still a constraint on business borrowing and a burden on family finances. Inflation is already much lower than the double digits seen under the previous government. And the choices I make in this budget, this month, will be focused on getting inflation falling and creating the conditions for interest rate cuts to support economic growth and improve the cost of living. I understand the urge for easy answers. Politicians of recent years have become addicted to shelling out for short-term sticking plaster solutions rather than making long-term economic plans. They were irresponsible then. And those who continue to push for easy answers are irresponsible now. The UK's national debt now stands at £2.6 trillion, equivalent to 94% of GDP. Before the mini-budget, our borrowing costs were in the middle of the pack compared to other advanced economies. But now, we have the highest borrowing costs of any G7 country. Today, one in every £10 of taxpayers' money is spent on debt interest. Not paying that debt down, but just paying the interest to our creditors. At the budget last year, I changed the fiscal rules to strike a careful balance, to invest more in capital alongside a credible plan to grow our economy and bring debt down within this Parliament. That was the right decision, to break the cycle of low productivity and low growth. But that additional investment can only be delivered because markets know my commitment to the fiscal rules is ironclad. Some people say that we should just sidestep those rules, that we can borrow more without consequence by simply reclassifying areas like defence or education. But no accounting trick can change the basic fact that government debt is sold on financial markets. There are limits on the price that banks, hedge funds and pension funds are willing to pay for our debt. And we are competing constantly with other countries also selling debt. The more that we try to sell, the more it will cost us. It is important that everyone, the public and politicians, understand that reality. The less we spend on debt interest, the more we can spend on the priorities of working people, our NHS, our schools, our national security, the public services essential to both a decent society and a strong economy. At the budget last year, I provided our public services with a vital cash injection, and I am proud of that choice. Proud that it is a Labour government that is providing record investment in our NHS, getting waiting lists down by over 200,000 since the election. Proud that it is a Labour government that is investing in our children through the rollout of free breakfast clubs and free school meals. And proud that it is a Labour government that is funding our armed forces and remains resolute in our NATO commitments. The alternative is to row back on those investments, to return to the cycle of austerity and decline, which is what got us here in the first place, passing the cost of government failure onto communities and families, stifling our economic growth and weakening Britain's foundations in an unstable world. I will not repeat those mistakes. But if we want strong public services in the decades to come, then we must recognise that productivity and efficiency are not only a challenge for business, they are a challenge for the public sector too. At the spending review, I announced £14 billion of efficiencies per year to be delivered by 2029. Cutting government spend on consultancies, getting rid of bureaucratic quangos and regulators, and driving efficiency through AI and digital technologies. But I know that there is more to do. In the budget and beyond, I will continue to drive for more productive and more efficient public services right across government, making savings and rooting out waste wherever I find it. Now, my opponents will tell you that they could do more. Reform. Who promised savings from our public services. And yet, in Kent County Council and councils they run across Britain, apparently they can't find a single penny. And instead going to increase council tax for more than 2 million people. Or the Conservatives, who promised £47 billion of cuts, when during 14 years in power they oversaw rising welfare costs and a growing civil service. What were they doing for 14 years? Let us be clear. There is no way that cuts on that scale, equivalent to cutting our entire armed forces or cutting every single police officer in the country twice over, could be delivered without devastating consequences for our public services. Austerity, reckless borrowing, made-up numbers. They are the problems, not the solutions. They are the mistakes of the past which would only take us backwards. I will not repeat them. When I was appointed Chancellor, people put their faith in me to take our country forward. Not to be swayed by political convenience. Not to always do what is popular. But to do what is right. At the budget, I will continue to deliver on the priorities of the British people. Cutting NHS waiting lists. Cutting the national debt. And cutting the cost of living. And in the context of the long-term challenges on our productivity and heightened global uncertainty, any Chancellor of any party would be standing here today facing the choices that I face. The difference is in the priorities and the values that will guide those choices. Mine will be a budget for growth, with fairness at its heart, and a budget that supports businesses to create jobs and to innovate. As I take my decisions on both tax and spend, I will do what is necessary to protect families from high inflation and interest rates, to protect our public services from a return to austerity, and to ensure that the economy that we hand down to future generations is secure, with debt under control. If we are to build the future of Britain together, we will all have to contribute to that effort. Each of us must do our bit for the security of our country and the brightness of its future. There is a reward for getting these decisions right. To build more resilient public finances with the headroom to withstand global turbulence. Giving business the confidence to invest and leaving government freer to act when the situation calls for it. To continue to invest in our infrastructure and our industry to build a stronger economy. And to get the cost of borrowing down, spending less on debt interest and more on schools and on our health service. The Office of Budget Responsibility will make their forecasts at the end of this month. But let's be clear about what forecasts are. They're not visions of the future. They're a look in the rearview mirror. The OBR rightly make their predictions based on the data that has gone before. But I do not believe that our past has to determine our future. Or that a stuttering economy, poor productivity and falling living standards is somehow Britain's destiny. A brighter future is within our grasp. We were elected to break with the cycle of decline. And this government is determined to see that through. So we will go further and faster on planning, on the industrial strategy, on reforming regulation, all to deliver growth throughout our economy in all parts of our country. We will bear down on waiting lists, on the cost of living, and on the national debt, which compound these challenges. And when that requires hard choices, we will act, guided by the interests of working people. We were elected on a commitment to put country before party, the national interest before political calculation. And whatever challenges come our way, whatever challenges come my way, we will not be swayed from that. At the budget this year, I will continue to build the strong foundations to secure Britain's future. For a fairer Britain, a more prosperous Britain, a Britain with an economy that works for everyone. Thank you very much. I'll now take questions.
You're listening to the Chancellor here on LBC 8:28, taking questions from the media. Let's go back to the press conference.
You made history in your last budget when you increased taxes by £40 billion in the biggest tax-raising budget in over a generation. You said at the time it was a once-in-a-parliament tax-raising budget, and you told me explicitly Labour would stick to our manifesto commitment not to increase taxes that working people pay. Today, do you still stand by both those promises? And if you can't or if you won't, aren't you making a mockery of the voters that put their trust in you at the general election? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Beth. I will set out the individual policies at the budget on the 26th of November. That's not what today is about. Today is about setting the context for that budget. And your viewers can see the challenges that we face, but the challenges that are on a global nature. And they can also see the challenges in the long-term performance of our economy. And the Office of Budget Responsibility will set all that out. They've done the review of the supply side of the economy. That looks at the past, but they use the past to predict the future. And as Chancellor, I have to face the world as it is, not the world that I want it to be. And when challenges come our way, the only question is how to respond to them, not whether to respond or not. And as I respond at the budget on the 26th of November, my focus will be on getting NHS waiting lists down, getting the cost of living down, and also getting the national debt down. Robert Peston from ITV News.
Chancellor, good to see you. You've just made the case, in effect, for raising taxes by tens of billions of pounds. The HMRC stats don't lie. If you do that, you will have to put up taxes for millions of people, including those you call working people, won't you?
Well, today is not about individual choices. They will be set out in the usual way in the budget. But what I want people to understand as we go into that budget is the circumstances which we face. And that is circumstances of great opportunities for our country, for the reasons that I set out, but also big challenges. And as Chancellor, I could do what previous governments have done, which is to sweep those challenges under the carpet, to cut capital spending to make the numbers add up. But then we'd be back here in a year or in 5 years' time with productivity still on its knees, growth underperforming compared with our peers, and the national debt continued to rise. So I'm being honest with people that at the election I said that we would put the national interest first. People can see that things are changing, that the global circumstances are challenging, and I hope they will see at the budget on the 26th of November that the focus on getting the debt down, getting NHS waiting lists down, and getting the cost of living down, which continues to be people's number one concern, are the priorities that I will be focusing on. Neil MacDonald from Channel 4 News.
Hello, Chancellor. Concerns about the OBR's assessment of productivity have been around for years and years and years. You must surely have known this problem was lurking out there. Does that mean that you should have been clearer with people at the time of the election that you might have put up taxes to deal with that problem?
Well, we did increase taxes last year at the budget to fill the £22 billion black hole in the public finances. Chancellor, of course, has to use the independent forecasts of the Office of Budget Responsibility, and we used those last year at the budget, at the spring statement, and at the spending review. But, of course, it is their right to change those forecasts. But the most important thing is that we use those forecasts to underpin a budget or a spending review. And in fact, when a Chancellor decides not to do that, you go the way that Liz Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng did, where they wouldn't even allow the OBR to do a forecast. I have respect for independent economic institutions, whether that is an independent Bank of England or an independent Office of Budget Responsibility, and that's why I use their forecasts in the way that we should. But they will update, as we all know, their view about the supply side of the economy. They will set out the reasons for doing that and the reasons for their new assumptions on total factor productivity, the productivity predictions for the forecast. But forecasts are by their nature based on past data. I don't believe that the past is our destiny. I believe and I am determined to defy those forecasts. But it is right that we use those forecasts to underpin our economic policy. Otherwise, I'm afraid it is the road to ruin, which is the road that Liz Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng chose, which is why we still have higher borrowing costs than every other G7 economy. That was not the case before that mini budget. I'm determined to bring those borrowing costs down and to bring our national debt down. So instead of spending one in every £10 of taxpayers' money on servicing our national debt, we can put that money to good use in our public services. Chris Mason from BBC News.
Thank you, Chancellor. Chris Mason, BBC News. I've got your manifesto here from last year, and on page 21 it says explicitly that Labour will not increase taxes on working people, which is why we will not increase national insurance, the basic higher or additional rates of income tax or VAT. What do you say to those who have listened to you this morning, and yes, they'll wait for your choices in a few weeks' time, but will say perhaps, crikey, it looks like the Chancellor's about to drive a coach and horses through either that promise or the promise from a year ago not to come back for more. And if I may, on last week's news, how did you manage to make such a mess of applying for a rental licence on your home, having championed the very policy yourself, and then managed to give one account to the Prime Minister, only to come back and have to give another one? Thank you.
So I will set out the specific policy choices on the 26th of November, and that's the right thing to do. And we're going through that process and the iterative process with the OBR at the moment, with the forecast and different policy measures. But what I want people to understand, and I think it is the right thing and the courteous thing to do to explain those challenges, but also the principles that will guide me in confronting them, and that's what today's speech is about. You know, there would be a different route through this, as I said in a previous answer. I could say, as I said to Robert and what previous chancellors did, was, OK, we've got these challenges coming our way. The easy thing to do would be to cut investment in housing, to cut investment in energy security, to cut investment in our transport infrastructure. The reason we have such low productivity today and the reason why the OBR are updating their forecasts is because governments have done that for the last 14 years. And that's why we face so many of the challenges we face today. And I'm not going to be a chancellor like that. I am going to put the country first. I'm going to put the national interest first so that chancellors in the future are not going to have to address the productivity puzzle. I don't think it's a puzzle, but the productivity problem that we face today. I'm going to take the long-term interests in our country's interest. And as I make those decisions, I am going to be laser focused on what I think are the key things for our country right now, and that is to get our debt down, because if we weren't spending one in every £10 on just servicing the debt, not even repaying it, but just on the interest costs, then we'd have more money for our NHS, or indeed money for tax cuts, getting NHS waiting lists down. We've already cut them by over 200,000 in the first year of this Labour government. But, of course, there's more to do with the waiting lists, still more than 7 million, and to get the cost of living down, because interest rates and inflation, of course, are putting pressure on family finances in the same way that taxes put pressure on family finances. So I set out the circumstances that I'm confronting going into this budget, and also the principles, and then people will be able to judge whether they think I've made the right decisions. I will argue that they are the right decisions in our country's national interest. Of course, it's the role of others to scrutinise, but for other political parties, it's their responsibility to put forward an alternative. And an alternative, not a fantasy economics like what we're hearing at the moment from Reform and the Conservative, but serious plans, because that's what these times demand. Ben Riley-Smith from the Daily Telegraph. Oh, sorry. And on the issue of housing, there was an exchange of letters last week between myself and the Prime Minister, and the Prime Minister's ethics advisor has passed his judgment. I don't have anything more to say than that.
8:38, you've been listening to the Chancellor. Let's give you a quick overview, then we'll go back to Andrew Lillico, the columnist at the Telegraph and economist as well. The Chancellor standing at a lectern with strong foundation, secure future. These are these snappy headlines that they like, flanked either side by the Union flag, spoke for 18 minutes, talked of her priorities, protecting the NHS, reducing national debt, improving the cost of living. She'd praised the country's considerable economic strength and talked of our workforce. She did refer back to Liz Truss's disastrous budget, that £22 billion black hole. She said she's putting finances back on a firm footing, but she said there are more challenges on the way. She wants to increase defence spending. She wants to improve the welfare state, not make it a cost of failure, but invest in people and what they need the most. She also talked about the need for trains to run and for broadband to be provided. So she said too often political convenience has been prioritised in making decisions. She talked of a rushed and ill-conceived Brexit. She also talked of the pandemic, where the country was shown to be underprepared. She talked about bringing the brightest and the best to our shores. Many might think that was a strange thing to banter about people coming to our shores. She said growth of 1%, although it's the biggest in the G7, is simply not enough. She talked about the national debt, £2.6 trillion, 94% of GDP, as you heard her reference in questions there. £1 in every 10, simply to debt service the debt interest. She talked about continuing to build the strong foundations. It's fair to say in the four or five journalist questions that we heard, she was asked about whether commitments will be broken, and I think it's fair to say she swerved, as she did that question from Chris Mason of the BBC about her own issues with the rental of that property in Dulwich. Andrew Lillico, Executive Director and Principal of Europe Economics, columnist at The Telegraph. OK, sir, what have you learnt about the Chancellor's stewardship of the economy, the state of the economy, or what we're going to hear on the 26th of November? Morning again, Andrew.
Good morning. I don't think we've learned anything particularly new, as probably one would have expected. And I think she had a number of different audiences for this from this speech. So she was trying to manage her own backbenchers who have resisted attempts that the rather limited attempts that the government has made to cut spending, for example, on welfare. So she wanted to talk about how dangerous it would be if you were to end up borrowing more. She wanted to manage the public because she's going to put up taxes by a lot more, 30 billion or so. Maybe a bit more, maybe 35. And she'd said a year ago she wasn't going to do any of that, and she's trying to tell some story to the public as to why. Talking about Liz Truss turns out not to be enough. So we want to talk about Brexit. Apparently that's not enough, so we need to go further back in time, and now we're going to talk about austerity. If it goes on much, I don't know, in a couple of weeks' time, maybe it'll turn out to be Ted Heath that caused it all. So she's keep going back in time as to what the consequences are. But I think she also wants to move the conversation on a little bit more at the same time. So she wants to say, well, she's focused on reducing inflation. A lot of people would say that a big reason why inflation's higher in the UK are the choices that she made about increasing taxes, because they've increased costs to businesses. So UK inflation tends to be a bit higher than that of our peers. And she also wants to talk about growth. She thinks that there's a connection. She's trying to suggest that if she were to be cutting back on spending in certain areas, such as investment, then that would be damaging to growth, and so that's all integrated into her story. I don't think any of this is particularly new. She's going to face the same problem which she's faced over the past year, which is that her plans involve raising taxes to levels that the UK economy has never delivered on a long-term sustained basis. And we've seen over the past year that her tax plans have not been met, so the deficit's not been coming down as much as she hoped it would be. She doesn't have any political will internally or ability to cut the spending, so we're going to end up with 5% or so. We had 5% deficit last year. Maybe it's unlikely to come down to the 4%, which she was hoping this year. So that's just going to mean we're going to be 100% of debt to GDP, 105% debt to GDP, and so on, and it's going to be very difficult.
A couple of headlines written, obviously, last night for this morning for the Daily Express. Reeves softens us up for tax hikes. For the Guardian, Reeves paves way for tax-raising budget. Would you subscribe to those headlines, do you think, Andrew?
Absolutely. And it looks like she's going to raise income tax.
And we heard towards the end, a budget for growth with fairness at its heart that supports businesses. How do you interpret that?
I think that, so the budget for growth bit, I think she means that she's going to not cut public sector investment. So she's going to keep the spending high, because I think that's the kind of thing they mean. She wants to talk a bit about planning and so on, but then they'll try a few other minor things, but they don't really seem to have much imagination on the side of growth. And as for a budget for business, well, you know, you get the difficult bit out in the title, as they used to say on Yes Minister. So that prevents you from having to do any actual measures that help business.
Andrew Lillico, Executive Director, Principal of Europe Economics, thank you for giving us so much of your time this morning. You're also a columnist at the Telegraph. You are an economist as well, and a columnist at the Telegraph, and I imagine you will feature in their coverage later through the day and in tomorrow's edition. So let's just run over the priorities. We'll come to your calls, give you a news bulletin in a minute and a half. Let's just quickly come over, and I quote directly. Now, the priorities are protecting the NHS, reducing the national debt, improving the cost of living. We heard time and time again about the challenges. And here are the questions for you. As Andrew Lillico just said, we went back to Liz Truss. We went back to the pandemic. We went back to Brexit. It's Guy Fawkes tomorrow. Perhaps they're going to go far back to Guy Fawkes. So maybe it is time to move on. I felt in the questions that she was asked, I think we took four, maybe five questions, a complete refusal to actually even engage in the idea, and must have said on at least three occasions, I'm not going to write the budget now. That is the decisions that I will be making on November the 26th. And intriguingly as well, when asked directly by Chris Mason from the BBC about the fiasco that she found, in which she found herself last week over the rental of the property in Dulwich, simply mentioned an exchange of letters and nothing to see here, and on we go. So what do you take from that? Lastly, at one point I wrote down, and she said this, quotes, it's about being honest. Should we have another look at her CV and see just how honest that was? Calls coming in on that already. We'll assess the work of the Chancellor. She is, by the way, still talking, and we have got our political editor listening, so if there is a bombshell, we'll bring it to you. But then in the next hour, what time did your school used to end as a union kicks off because they're being asked to go beyond 2:30 in the afternoon? We'll be looking at school closing times. And also the abuse of the 999 system?
I only ordered one Savoyan chip. They sent me three Savoyan chips.
Now, if that's not a reason to call the Met, I don't know what is. Yes, people dopey enough, idiotic enough to do that. But I'm more on that as well. 8:45 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The Chancellor has said that she'll make the necessary choices for the economy in the upcoming budget, following speculation about further tax rises. Online pornography showing women being choked is to be made illegal, and Avanti West Coast has warned of disruption on its rail network until tomorrow after yesterday's landslide in Cumbria. LBC weather, wet and windy for much of England and Wales, drier for northern Scotland, highs of 17 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The Rotherhithe Tunnel remains closed both ways because of this ongoing technical problem that's severe delays in the area, and also severe delays with the Hanger Lane Tunnel being closed. This is the A40 in both directions. It's the tunnel that goes under the Hanger Lane gyratory. And also in the city, Upper Thames Street is closed both ways between Southwark Bridge and Blackfriars Underpass because of another problem inside that tunnel. So as a result, all the surrounding routes are hardly moving at all. Elsewhere, there are severe delays on the M25 anti-clockwise from Junction 27 at the M11 to 25 at the A10. A lorry's broken down and two lanes are closed. It means lots of people are deciding to use the M11 to head into London instead, so that's extremely busy.
Tonight with Andrew Marr from 6 p.m.
What does the Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, really think about the mess she got into over renting her house? In the first broadcast interview she's given since then, I'll bring you an exclusive answer at 6 tonight.
Tonight with Andrew Marr from 6 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
A safe trip begins with TRIP. Take a road trip with your family. Get there safely. Do your trip checks. T. Top up on island fuel. R. Rest every 2 hours too. I. Inspect tire pressure and tread. P. Prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with TRIP. A safe trip begins with...
Think, do the 4 trip checks before every long journey. National Highways.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Train to Chichester. Flasks filled, snacks packed, all ready for Maisie's first stargazing adventure.
Come on, Maisie. Follow everyone up to the top of that hill.
Oh, look, that one's the plough.
Shooting star! Oh, wow!
Made it. Last train back and feeling cosmic. And it seems we have an astronaut in the making. Download the Southern Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
We had our smart meter installed a year ago, and it's made things so much easier. Not having to submit meter readings or having to deal with estimated bills is great.
A smart meter sends meter readings direct to your energy supplier. It means you get accurate bills, not estimated bills, and you don't even need an internet connection. Call your energy supplier to request a smart meter today.
Real testimonials voiced by actors. Eligibility may vary.
Experience. It's knowing the difference between a good deal and, well, a great deal. Right now, get 3 months free when you take out Saga Health Insurance. You get 24/7 GP access whenever you want it. And the freedom to choose your preferred private hospital with your own room should you need it. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. New customers starting a policy before the 27th of November. Pay by monthly direct debit for the first year. Terms and conditions apply. Over 50s only.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties. Mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and shinies. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest. You probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Anthony, you'll be the first caller. Let's assess what we've heard from the Chancellor. I should tell you, she is still holding a press conference. There's obviously nothing major coming through, but our political editor will give us a wrap of what we've missed. Anthony, you're the first caller. Let me just feature some of these. Michael says, I can't believe this speech from Rachel in account. She's complaining about growth. She stopped it by increasing NI. The speech is just blah, blah, blah. Joe says Rachel Reeves is blaming anyone and everyone for her incompetence, an insult to the electorate to think we believe her lies. Julia Onga makes a fair point. It's a shame the Chancellor wasn't as diligent with her rental property and its licence as she is with this pre-budget waffle. And Dan says, this sounds like a speech I'd give to my kids before telling them their housekeeping is going up. Anthony's in Ashford. Anthony, what did you take from that 18 minutes of action from the Chancellor? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Thank you for queuing me in there. Yes, what I take is, what planet is she on, this woman? She doesn't seem to be in touch with reality. Your commentators are exactly right. Mm. She blames everything other than herself. Reform, the Tories, the mini-budget. She didn't say which mini-budget. Liz Truss, you know, it goes on and on. Does she not see that the blame lies with her, her total incompetence, the person she sees in the mirror in the morning?
What did you want her to say?
To say that let the economy grow, learn a bit from Margaret Thatcher, because that's what she professed to do at the start of coming as Chancellor. Stop taxing. She's like Fergie, she just can't stop spending, and she wants us to write out another cheque to buy her off. No, 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 as someone just said years ago.
Someone famously said no, no, no. I think what we can take from it, certainly, Anthony, is that, I don't know which one, probably income tax, but taxes are going to go up. That is plain as the proverbial nose on your face now, isn't it?
Indeed. I would say to her, just give us a clue. Do you remember that program years ago? She just hasn't got a clue.
It was called Give Us a Clue, wasn't it? Was that with Lionel Blair, I think? Anyway, it doesn't matter too much. Anthony, thank you for that. Joe's in Liverpool. Joe, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. She never mentioned at all about asylum seekers.
No, or what was
as
interesting?
They're commonly known as.
It's
unfortunately, I believe that anybody who puts this...
Hang on, I just want to read you what she did say, which I thought was strange choice of language. And I quote, it's about bringing the brightest and the best to our shores. Now, with all the pressure of what's going on with the small boat crossings, it was an interesting call to bring that into the conversation. Joe?
Well, at the end of the day, I don't know what her reference was to bringing the best into our shores. But, I mean, it seems from the news that we read here, and the items that come up on the news about the people who do come to our shores,
mm-hmm.
There is a high criminal element involved in them. They are referred to as asylum seekers.
Yes.
And unfortunately, as far as I'm concerned, if they put a foot on British soil anywhere in this country,
right,
and they have no passport, no way of proving identity or anything.
Okay. they should go. And then that is a very pertinent conversation. It's possibly not, because I'd really like to talk about what we've just heard from the Chancellor. Lastly, Joe, did she do as badly as you feared? Did she do better than you thought? Was she roughly what you were expecting, Joe? If we stay with what we've just heard, what would you say to that?
Roughly what I expected, but at the end of the day, Dick Turpin wore a mask. She doesn't even have the decency to do that when she's robbing people.
You should be a newspaper columnist or a news, what they call newspaper designer, because you could see that possibly on the front page of one of the papers on November the 27th, the day after the budget. Joe, thank you. Scott's in West Hampstead. Did she do better? Did she do roughly what you thought? Did she not do as well? How would you equate what you've just heard in 18 minutes and then the press conference? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. I was glued to the radio listening to that speech. I like the speech.
Okay.
I like honesty and brevity. I mean, I'm an old-age pensioner. Mm-hmm. I'm 75. Mm-hmm. I'm happy to pay more taxes. I had a letter the other day from the DWP, Department of Work and Pensions, saying that I was going to get a £200 fuel allowance for this year. I didn't have it last year. And I don't need that fuel allowance. And you know what? I don't need the triple lock payment every year either, because I've done well the last 2 or 3 years.
Not every, not every pensioner has got.
Right. No, but I'm happy too. I've got a good income. It's above the national average. And, you know, we all need to tighten our belts. And I was pleased with the speech. And I know that I'm going to pay more taxes. I'm downsizing anyway. I'm selling up and moving out of London because...
Okay. But Scott, sir. Not everyone. And well done. And this obviously reflects a lot of work and a lot of graft you put in, that you've got this kind of pension and you've got a house that you can, and I'm delighted for you, and you don't need your 200 quid for the winter. Not everyone is like that, Scott, and the Chancellor has to speak to everyone, not people who have put in a shift like you. I'm not saying you haven't, but are in a fairly good position, Scott.
No, I agree that the people who need the help, and I think what I heard from that speech was that, you know, there aren't going to be massive cuts of people who need the help, although she didn't explicitly say that. But, you know, yes, I think that the people who can afford to pay a bit more, you know, I don't want to see billionaires, millionaires leaving the country, you know, and so I know that's happening. But,
yes,
you know, there are a lot of people like me who are reasonably well-off pensioners who have done okay in their lives, who can afford to pay a bit more, not pensioners who really need it. That's different.
Okay, where are you going, sir? You say you're selling up in West Hampstead. Where are you off to?
Moving. I think I've spoken to you before about certainly spoken to Sheila Fogarty. Worthing, that's where I'm going.
Okay.
The South Coast.
Okay.
I want sea, and I want to be walking in the South Downs for the rest of my life.
Sounds absolutely blissful. I happen to know Worthing. I've been there a couple of times. Enjoy. You've certainly got the sea, and you've certainly got the Downs. Just coming back, you made a point. Yes, here we are. In the aspect of the speech in which she talked about increasing defence spending, she talked about where the money wants to go. She wants to improve the welfare state so it is not the cost of failure, it is investment in those who need it most. Well, you didn't get very far with your attempted reforms, did you? Because you had a rebellion the size of Texas on your hands from the backbenchers. You couldn't get through even the mildest of reforms. So what are we to take from that? 4 to 9, Matt's in Birmingham. Matt, you're on the radio. Good morning.
I am Birmingham, Nick.
Hello, sir.
The worrying thing is that that statement she made about the best and brightest. Now, does that mean she's going to be bringing in cheap labour for doctors and nurses or like they already are?
You'd have because to ask her. What did you? I mean, I don't know, sir. What did you take from? What do you think she meant?
I think that's what she means. The best and brightest that they're going to bring them in. Obviously, you haven't mentioned about the migrants. Forget about the migrants for the moment. It's the doctors and nurses and people. We're already struggling to give them jobs as it is.
Well, this bit came after she talked about a rushed and ill-conceived Brexit and a pandemic that left the country underprepared. She then went on to bring in the brighter. I think it is about sort of kick-starting the economy, she was trying to say. Matt?
I'm sick and tired of the government blaming everything on consecutive governments. Yeah, they mucked up, they did. And blaming everything on reform, you know, for everything they've said to kick off a few things. It's their job. At the end of the day, take responsibility for the job you've been given and do something about it. And listen to the people on LBC, the experts who are ringing in and saying about invest and lower taxes and everything.
No, I hear what you say. Matt, strong points. Well put. Thank you. Please excuse me moving on. Only a minute or so more before we give you a new... Well, 2 minutes, actually, we give you a news update. So let's get some more voices on. Marilyn in Chadwell Heath. Did she do better than you thought? Not as well as you... Go on.
Hello, Nick.
Hello.
What it is with Rachel, I hate to be unkind,
but I just don't like the sound of her voice. I know it sounds really horrible.
You don't want to be unkind, but you don't like the sound.
No, I know. And also, she sounded like she'd been sort of programmed. She sounded like Keir Starmer, the same patter that Keir Starmer talks. She sounded just exactly like him. And also, why do they keep, like I agree with all the other callers, why do they keep bringing back old times? We have to move on. She shouldn't keep bringing up the Conservatives.
Well, if it is her belief that the economy is bust because of Liz Truss, the pandemic, a poor Brexit, is she not allowed to say that, Marilyn? What do you think?
No, we should move on. She should just say, look, yes.
Okay.
Should move on.
Okay, lastly, you questioned her delivery, let's put it like that.
Yes, delivery was the same as if someone has, you know, they get voice coaches.
Yes, of course.
That obviously, if you listen, she sounds exactly the same as if she was like a female Keir Starmer.
Lastly, who is the last politician you had whose delivery or voice you really liked? When he or she started speaking, you thought, actually, I really warm to what they're saying. Can you remember one?
Yes, I liked Rishi Sunak.
And I like
Boris.
And you like Boris Johnson. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right, thanks for the input on that, Marilyn. Have yourself a good day. Delivery doesn't get there for Marilyn. Giles says, Reeves' history lesson to the point of her takeover is very much on point, but it's her decision to increase employer national insurance that continued the trend of stifling the economy by restricting jobs and therefore tax growth. Sham simply says, lies, lies, lies. Politicians can say any drivel. There is no accountability nor consequence. Do keep them coming. But coming up after the news. Yep, school day's over. Let's get out of there because it's 2:30. That's when school ends now. Well, the Education Secretary's got it in her sights. I'll be asking, when does school end in your day? And if your children go to school, or child or children go to school, surely they could go to at least 3:30, couldn't they? Is that asking too much? Plus those pointless 999 calls.
Whereabouts are you, please?
I'm at home, actually.
Right, so what's going on?
Basically, I don't know how you feel about this, but KFC's closed. I'm entirely not happy. I have to go to Burger King now.
Well, don't worry, they scrambled the helicopter for that one. And we will come back to the Chancellor's speech as well. 9 o'clock news on LBC's next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, the Chancellor has refused to rule out further tax rises in her upcoming budget, insisting she'll make the necessary choices.
If we are to build the future of Britain together, we will all have to contribute to that effort. Each of us must do our bit for the security of our country and the brightness of its future.
Rachel Reeves has been speaking in Downing Street in the last hour, 3 weeks before her fiscal statement. She said the UK's productivity is weaker than previously thought and accused the Conservatives of overseeing years of economic mismanagement. Ms Reeves also said she isn't afraid of making difficult decisions to correct long-term issues.
When I was appointed Chancellor, people put their faith in me to take our country forward, not to be swayed by political convenience, not to always do what is popular, but to do what is right.
Stay with LBC throughout today for all the reaction to Rachel Reeves' speech. In other news this morning, investigations are continuing into whether a man accused of a stabbing attack in Cambridgeshire is linked to other knife offences. Anthony Williams, who's 32, is charged with the attempted murder of 10 people on a train on Saturday. Police are now also looking into 3 other reports of a man with a knife in Peterborough on Friday night. Online pornography showing women being choked is to be made illegal after a review found such images are rife on websites. The measures are part of a government plan to tackle violence against women and girls. It follows a study which found such material has helped normalise the act among young people. The Conservative peer, Baroness Burton, carried out the review and has told LBC immediate changes are needed.
If you want to try and reduce the sort of violence against women and girls, and also teach boys the sort of what a good relationship is, you can't allow such a huge raft of violent content that online strangulation was adding up to, essentially.
And train customers are being warned not to travel north of Preston until tomorrow. Repair work is ongoing after an Avanti West Coast service derailed near Shap in Cumbria yesterday. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 78 at 96.23. The pound buys $1.30 and €1.13. LBC weather, wet and windy for much of England and Wales through today. Drier for northern Scotland and southern England, feeling very mild, a high of 17 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
In 2024, a hangry fan posted, why do other countries have better McDonald's menus than ours? So, we went abroad and heisted some worldwide favourites. The World Menu Heist. 9 of the most wanted McDonald's menu items from around the world. Now in the UK. Until 25th of November from 11am, fees apply to delivery orders. Price and participation may vary, subject to availability.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 3 minutes after nine on Tuesday, the 4th of November. Early closing schools are in the sights of the Education Secretary. Some schools closing at 2:30. I think we were just finishing lunch in my day. We'll get into that story in more detail and, of course, get your recollections of school days or your child. Or your children's current school days. We, of course, will look back at what we heard in the previous hour.
Chancellor Rachel Reeves paved the way for tax rises, saying we're all going to have to contribute to fix the dire public finances. I'm LBC's Natasha Clark with the latest from Downing Street.
Plus, as it's revealed, that calls into the Metropolitan Police, only 15% are genuine emergencies. That's obviously 15 in every 100 or 1.5 in every 10. We've been giving you some of the pointless calls, including someone who ordered one Savaloy and got three, and someone who was rather angry that KFC or Burger King was closed. I can't quite remember which one it was, but here's another one.
I'm catching a bug. The driver's been whistling all the trip. I mean, everybody's tired. What if everybody starts whistling?
Can I just confirm you've called police 999 emergency because the coach driver is whistling?
Yes.
You think that's something? You'll hear more later in the hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Do you know what I would do if I was that call handler? Oh, madam, that sounds very suspicious. Could I get your name, Mrs. Jones? Yes. Where do you live? 17 High Street. Fantastic. Right. You're being fined. You're going to be fined £500. If you think you're going to ring us about whistling coach drivers, or if you were listening earlier, I'm very angry. I ordered one Savaloy and chips and they've sent three. If you think that's what you've got to call the police about, and it will come to more of that in a moment. Should we get away from politics and into the classroom? That sound, which when I was at school, I think it was four, but I'm not going to argue if you say it's 3:45, but I think it was 4 o'clock. So what do we make now of Bridget Phillipson taking on schools that she says are shirking and closing before 3:30? It's a curriculum review taking place this week. The Education Secretary is expected to criticise schools that close earlier in the afternoon and refuse to meet the government's target of opening for at least 32.5 or 32.5 hours a week. The rules have been flouted by a number of schools which argue that closing early can ease pressure on staff or lower energy bills. Oh, please. What utter tosh. Some schools are routinely closing at 2:30. My children, of course, no longer attend school. They're having children of their own. But your child or children, what time did school end? Yesterday. What time school? If you're going to collect them from the school gates, what time have you got to be there? Let's talk with Steve Chalk, founder of the Oasis Academy, 54 Academy, schools across the country, joining me now. All right, if I was to go around and do a survey of the schools that you are, the Oasis has, what sort of closing times am I looking at? Good morning.
Well, good morning, Nick. Good to talk to you. Well, 32.5 hours a week, it equals 6.5 hours a day. So that you can open at 8:30 and shut at 3, or open at 9 and shut at 3:30, etc. Right. But what Bridget Phillipson also said is that it's the 32.5 hours a day averaged out over the week. So that's how you get to your 32.5 hours across 5 days. And so what I would say is, beyond that and beyond what she said, that 6.5 hours a day, it makes sense, doesn't it, to trust teachers. So that's why some of our schools open earlier and shut earlier. Some open later and shut later, all fulfilling their obligation, but all thinking about the context and the lives of the children and the families. Of course, you've got a responsibility to parents and their kind of working hours, etc. So it's about picking the right approach, the right pedagogy, the right way of teaching, in other words, and the right curriculum, and the right the right enrichment after school. So we're fortunate, actually, Nick, because Oasis was never just an educational charity. When I first set it up, we did youth work. So we got loads of youth workers and family workers. When the teachers go home, some of those people can take over and run other opportunities for kids, practical ones, and, of course, mentoring as well. So I don't think we should stick all of this responsibility back on teachers. They've got to work forever longer, forever harder. They've got a long list of tasks already. But I do think that 6.5 hours a day is the minimum.
You'll be aware that teachers at the Outwood Grange academies have threatened to take industrial action if their school a day is pushed back from 2:30 to 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Steve.
Yeah, I read that. I read that in the Telegraph. I didn't know about that until then. I think they've settled that now. I think the school was asking for, the leaders were asking for 30 minutes longer at the end of the day. The unions got involved, and I think they've all settled on 20 minutes longer. I think that if that kind of thing happens, Nick, and it is laughable, isn't it, arguing over 10 minutes here or there, but it goes to something deeper, doesn't it? And the breakdown of trust, maybe. I don't know anything about that situation. But if you look after your teachers, they look after the kids. And I always say to our senior leaders nationally, our job isn't actually to care for the children. Our job is to care for our staff, because if they are well nourished, then they will nourish children well. So I hope that makes sense.
Just lastly, so we talk about a 6.5 hour school day. That's obviously for, I'm going to talk secondary school, that's obviously for an 11-year-old all the way up to a 16-year-old. I know once you get into sixth form, you have different classes, I remember that. But yeah. Is there an argument
longer
that...
Longer as well.
Longer, yeah. Is there an argument that perhaps a 16-year-old should be doing a little bit more than an 11-year-old?
Of course, and we, you know, you should become the educational secretary. That's what you should be.
The country's suffered enough, Steve.
Because what we've got to think is how long a child can hold concentration. Yeah. And obviously, as you get older, you can do that for longer. It's also true, Nick, that boys' brains develop more slowly than girls' brains. The cerebellum, et cetera, the prefrontal cortex. We know all this now. We didn't know it when I went to school. And we didn't know it when you went to school. No. So when the school day starts and how long it lasts and the intensity of it should be related to the children in front of you. But I, what I would say to you is I believe that the vast, vast majority of teachers in this country, they're not in it for the money, are they? Or in spite of all the media that goes around, they love kids, they care about kids, and they're working hard to do the best for kids within the system that we've got.
Thanks for your help on Education Matters. As ever, Steve Chalk, founder of the Oasis Academy Trust. They have 54 academy schools across the country. Listening, Barry Smith, who is an education consultant, former school leader. He was head of the Great Yarmouth Charter Academy in Norfolk. He was co-founder and deputy head of the Michaela Community School, of course, here in London. He's been known as Britain's strictest head teacher. Do you buy the fact, Mr. Smith, that boys have more trouble concentrating than girls? Good morning to you.
Morning, sir. Do I buy that? Oh, I guess arguably you could say that. In a well-run school, everybody works hard, everybody focuses. The systems are set up so boys and girls, everybody focuses and everybody succeeds. So
11-year-old...
I would put that aside. I don't like to get into too much... There'll always be a study that will prove something you want to prove. Yeah, well, you know, the brain isn't fully developed till you're 25, apparently. I'm really not too worried about that. I worry about what happens within the school from the moment the gates open to the gates close. That's what we can control.
Is 6.5 hours a day a fair daily output?
The unions say it's the pay in terms and conditions for staff. That teachers do 1,265 hours per academic year across 195 days. So if you ask teachers to do more than 1,265 hours, some of them will complain. So as a head, you have to juggle that. And within that 1,265 hours, which is 6.5 hours a day, over 195 days, you have to factor in covering lunch breaks, and you have to factor in covering... the morning break, you also have morning clubs and afternoon clubs, and you have parents' evenings. So there's an awful lot to juggle. 32.5 hours a week isn't a lot. Some teachers will work, I think it's perfectly reasonable in the 39 weeks you work as a teacher, to work 50-hour weeks. I think you get there for 7:30, you leave at 5:30. I think that's perfectly reasonable. A bit less on a Friday, maybe.
What about the children? What about the children, lastly? Should they be ending at 2:30, 3, 3:15, or doesn't it matter? Wherever the 6.5 hours end is where the 6.5 hours end.
Well, and the head has to decide whether he wants to start early or finish late. It's entirely the head.
Is it the same in the private sector?
Don't know.
All right. Thanks for your time, Barry. Barry Smith, education consultant, former school leader, was head of the Great Yarmouth Charter Academy in Norfolk, co-founder of the award-winning Michaela Community School in London. Fatima is in Ealing. Right, Fatima, are we talking about you or your children and finishing time at school? Good morning.
Hi there. No, I don't have kids. I'm talking about myself.
Right. Tell me about happened then. What can you recall from your school days?
So, just to clarify, I'm 29 years old, so this was secondary school, so like 12 to 15 years ago. But, we finished at 2:15. I think we started around 8 to 8:30.
Right.
And to be honest, it worked really well, actually, because we had school clubs afterwards, like sports clubs or tutoring lessons. I think it was fine. And by that time, it was secondary school also, so I would go home by myself.
I'm going to call them games lessons, sports lessons, whatever. Were they on the school timetable, or were all your games lessons after school, effectively?
It was optional. Yeah, they were all optional. So they were, they were sports clubs. I think they were really important for my own development.
Yeah.
So things like that.
Lastly, you didn't have regular, we used to call them periods, lessons, classes, I don't know, whatever. You didn't have regular games lessons then? It was only ever if you joined one of the sports clubs?
No, it wasn't mandatory to go to any of these after school. So, I like sports, so I went to sports clubs, but there were like science extra lessons that you could have taken or maths or something. Yeah. But I should clarify, it was an academy. So the school didn't have endless of funding.
Okay.
As much as they probably would have liked to.
Thanks for taking back to your school days. Have a safe day, Fatima. I talked about private school. Here we are. Lee says, my 7-year-old child's day starts at 8 a.m., finishes at 5 p.m. They're at a private school. That's a 9-hour day. That's longer than I work. That's a lot, isn't it? David Houston, the schools that finish at 2:30 must be ensuring their pupils are committing to all their appointments. Okay, thank you for that one. Not sure what that means. This row about going from 2:30 to 3, we mentioned it earlier. The NASUWT, National Association of School Union Women Teachers, one of the largest unions, put this on social media.
School day usually ends at 2:30 p.m. Department for Education guidance now says that the school day needs to be a bit longer. So the Academy Trust have proposed to extend the day from finishing at 2:30 p.m. to 3 p.m. That's 30 minutes gained that could be added to much needed breaks. That's what other schools in the same boat have done.
Well, if you're a teacher, in some instances, with the pupils, you're working a 32.5-hour week. And then obviously there's other prep on that. And you have the holidays. Why can't they do an extra half an hour? We'll come back to that. It's 9:15, LBC News headlines then. Dominic Ellis.
The Chancellor has said that she'll make the necessary choices for the economy in the upcoming budget, following speculation about further tax rises. Online pornography showing women being choked is to be made illegal, and Avanti West Coast has warned of disruption on its rail network until tomorrow after yesterday's landslide in Cumbria. LBC weather, wet and windy for much of England and Wales, drier for northern Scotland, highs of 17 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. So the Rotherhithe Tunnel remains closed both ways, along with the Hanger Lane Tunnel, that's the A40 closed both ways, and Upper Thames Street is closed both ways between Southwark Bridge and the Blackfriars Bridge, and that's also because of the technical problem. It's a problem with the cameras inside the tunnel, and all three of those closures are causing severe delays. Now, elsewhere on the M25, anti-clockwise, there are queues from junction 27 at the M11 to 25 at the A10, and that's because a lorry has broken down. Also very slow on the A12 southbound to the Boreham interchange. That's junction 19. A lorry has broken down, so one lane is closed and there are huge delays on the approach.
This is LBC.
When you buy a BMW approved used electric car, there are no surprises. You'll find the largest range and the widest choice. Naturally. Every car has been meticulously checked by qualified BMW technicians. Hardly a plot twist. And they always come with a battery health report and at least 12 months unlimited mileage BMW warranty. Just as you'd expect. BMW approved used electric cars. Nothing new here. Search BMW approved used electric. obviously.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
At TfL, we're making tube journeys faster in the future with signalling improvements underway on the Circle, District, Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines. And there's also the Elizabeth line already giving you fast journeys across central London. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Elizabeth Line is fast compared to other TfL modes. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 ow. Well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe. Only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
It's that time of year again, which can only mean one thing. Save a third off roasting joints at Waitrose. Choose from tender beef silverside, succulent whole brined and seasoned chicken, or juicy beach smoked gammon. So, fire up your ovens and give winter a warm welcome with a third off roasting joints. Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected lines and stores subject to availability. Prices may vary in Channel Islands, Little Waitrose and Partners and Concessions. Offer ends 11th of November.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Let's get straight to the school day, or exactly what were the hours of your school day? Joe's in Retford. What was it for you then, Joe? Good morning.
Good morning to you. Hope you're well.
Yeah, good, thank you.
Times, we used to go in at 9 o'clock. We used to leave at 4 o'clock. Unless, of course, we had matches against other schools, in which case, wait for it. They wouldn't do this today. But the teachers used to run us to the actual match and bring us back again, and parents used to pick us up, or we'd walk home. No big deal.
Right.
And
when you say they used to run you, the teacher, in a school minibus,
in their cars. No. Yeah, in their own car.
I'm not sure that's a good idea because of the safety of the car and insurance reasons. I think a teacher driving.
Yeah, well, hang on a minute. With respect, I'm 73. This is going back donkey's years.
All right, okay.
And that's what it is. No, I wasn't being rude. I'm just saying we were going back donkey's years.
Yes. Well, where are we now then? So we're looking at. So that was a seven-hour school day you had then, right? In at 9 and out at 4, did you say?
Yes, I did, yes. Okay. Unless, again, unless we were going somewhere else.
Yep,
and
okay.
As for the sports as well, I'm sorry, is it Nick?
My name Nick? Is Nick, yes, yes.
Yes, I'm also sorry, I've just turned the radio off, you see, I can't be on the phone.
Oh, don't worry.
We used to do all sorts of things, and I heard a little bit earlier about, is it mandatory to go to gym and stuff? Yes, everything was. Everyone had to do it. And we all had what we call team classes, you know, like different names for just sports and everything. The sports.
Do you mean houses?
Yes, I did. That's what I meant to
say. That's right. Yeah, no, I think I know we had houses at our school. Might I ask, did you have children yourself and you'd watch their school hours or not the case?
Did I watch?
Have children yourself who attended school? Did you have children?
Yeah, I have. I've got one. She's about 38 now.
And what was her school day? Was she doing similar hours to you?
Well, yes.
Okay.
Yes, to a certain degree, yes. But they don't do the sport.
No.
They don't do hardly any sport. They go in the gym and jig about a bit, and that's about it. I've never seen any matches or anything like that to go in.
Lastly, Joe, why do you think sport is important?
I think it's good. I think it's good for them to have something to focus on and to enjoy. And obviously it keeps them fit,
yes.
et cetera.
All right. Give my best wishes to your daughter, Joe. Thank you for your input. Kate's in. Oh, we'll come to you, Kate, in just a moment. Sorry, more school calls in a moment. Let me do some of the emails that are coming in on schools. Here we are. This comes from John. I think this particular union is really trying it on. Some of those teachers undoubtedly will do more hours and are very, very happy doing it. Why should they necessarily decide to try and bring this industrial action about? This comes in from Paul in Nottinghamshire. Schools have shorter registrations, no daily assemblies, shorter breaks and lunch. That's where the day has gone. Gosh, a lot of you getting on with that. Stuart says, I finished at 3:45, then the 4 o'clock bus home, but I didn't get home till 5. Children today don't know that they are born. Dan says schools have shorter lunch times and breaks and often start earlier so they can shut early. The cost pressures aren't matched with the funding means heads teachers have to do whatever they can to save money. I don't see, unless you're going to tell me that Sumter House saves with the heating or something, I don't see how it's going to save money. I'm going to talk 999 in a moment, but Emily is in Wilmslow. Emily, you want to look at the schools issue from a different side, from the side of parents, I think. Good morning.
Hi, Nick. First time caller, so thanks for having me.
Good to have you on. What are you going to tell me?
Yeah, I just want to look at it from, obviously there's an education piece to discuss, but there's also sort of a wider society piece, and I do struggle to understand how parents who are working, particularly two parents working in a household, could pick up their children at 2:30 in the afternoon.
Well, it's hard enough at 3, I would have thought, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really hard. I come from a two-parent working household.
Yeah.
And the school day is a real challenge, and I feel that this is a reason why a lot of people, and usually women, unfortunately, are sort of pushed out of the workforce.
Yeah.
And I think that has a wider impact on the economy as a whole.
Do you mind my asking, sorry, so you have to collect your child or children from school now, do you, Emily?
I do, yes.
And how do you make that work? What sort of, are we talking one? How many children do you have?
So I have two. One's a baby, but one is school age.
Okay. And how do you make that work? What time, or are you staying at home at the moment? How is it working?
So it's a real, real juggle, and it's one of the reasons that we chose to send our child at huge financial sacrifice to a private school in the end, because we just didn't have the option at a state school to send her around school hours, and they couldn't offer the wraparound care that we needed. So it was either one of us would need to stop working or we'd have to continue working and have a huge financial sacrifice to send her to a private school. So her school hours are 8:30 till 3:30, but
right.
They offer a huge amount of clubs and extracurricular activities, which means we can pick her up at 5 most days.
Right. What does she do for that hour and a half? Is it like games or whatever?
So it's really varied. So she does sports, she does Spanish, she does dance, gymnastics, all sorts of things.
How old is she?
She's only 4, so
right.
They're long days for her. But it's the only way that we can make it work and continue working, which is what we both want to do.
Here, Emily, I'm going to start talking about the Chancellor again in a moment from her speech. She was the one who championed the idea of VAT on school fees. What was the impact of that for you?
It was huge for us. You know, we're a
family. But a lot of my listeners would say you're rich. They would say, no sympathy for Emily and her husband or her partner or whatever it is. If they have a child at private school, they've got to be rich, is what so many of my listeners will be thinking now. I hasten to add, because I know the reality, but what would you say to them?
I would say I appreciate that we are more well off than a lot of people in this country, but I also think we work extremely hard for that.
Yep. Yep.
And you know, we could quite easily not send her and not work as hard, and one of us stay at home, and it would actually be a lot easier in terms of logistics and things like that, for one of us to stay at home and just have one income and not be able to afford to send her to private school.
And lastly, of course, you're both working hard, you each get an income too, so you're paying more in tax as well. That's the other way to look at it. So you're paying more in tax and you're paying more in VAT for your school fees.
Exactly. Yeah, we're paying a lot of tax. And I do appreciate that. You know, we may be better off than some people, but
no, I'm with you. I did. So many people do not understand the reality of putting a child or children through private school. They seem to think everyone is driving around in a brand new Bentley, and it's not the reality. Emily, look after her, and of course the little one as well. Thank you so much for your call. Talk again soon. I do have to move on to other matters. And the news from the Metropolitan Police showing today, figures released today. Of every 100 calls that was received, 999 for the police, just 15 are genuine emergencies, i.e. 15%. So that means calls such as these.
Whereabouts are you, please?
I'm at home, actually.
Right, so what's going on?
Basically, I don't know how you feel about this, but KFC is closed. I'm entirely not happy. I have to go to Burger King now.
I'm catching a bus. The driver's been whistling all the trip. I mean, everybody's tired. What if everybody starts whistling?
Can I just confirm you've called police 999 emergency because the coach driver is whistling?
Yes.
Hello, you're through to the police.
I want to know the time. The time.
You want to know the time?
The time.
Right, but you've rung on 999, the emergency line, for the police?
I only ordered one sirloin chip. They sent me three sirloin chips.
They got the armed response unit out for that one. No, they didn't. I'm only kidding. Let's talk with Kate in Chelmsford. Now, you're a 999 call handler, but not for the police, for the ambulance. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Kate, when you hear calls such as that, do you and your colleagues have similar stories to the ambulance service?
Yeah, completely. I would say the same. About 10 to 15% is actual real emergencies.
So what other things do they ring about?
Stubbed toes, toothache, sore finger, hangnails. They call to complain about the council, complain that they're cold. We have people call and ask for them to send a paramedic because they're in bed and they don't want to get up and turn their lights off.
No way. No way. Oh, Kate. Yep. How stressful is your job?
Yeah, very.
Do you enjoy it?
I do, yeah. It's hard work, but you can take one call in 1,000 that will stick with you and make you think, okay, I've actually helped someone there.
How long is the shift?
12 hours.
12 hours? Good Lord. How many do you do in a week?
Three or four.
So three on, four off, or whatever it might be. You get a break for those 12 hours, don't you?
So we get, in a 12-hour shift, you get one half an hour and two 15s, so 1 hour's break across the 12.
Is this legal?
I don't know.
Wow. How big a team would there be taking calls? Are you one of 15, 20, 25? How many around you?
So in the east of England, who I work for, there's three control rooms. You've got Chelmsford, Bedford and Norwich.
Yeah.
We have, across the three, there's probably 30 to 45 in at one time.
What's morale like among all you handlers? Do I call you a call handler? I don't want to be offensive. Is that what you're...
Call handler, yeah.
Okay. What's the morale like among all the call handlers?
Luckily, we work with very good people. Everyone is really nice. So you have to be a certain type of person to work there. You have to have a little bit of dark humour sometimes to cope with the things that you're hearing. Obviously, it can be a bit tough when it comes to things like pay, the long hours, unsociable hours. But overall, everyone gets on pretty well.
Do you ever wonder how, and it must have been my mum or my dad who stressed to me the importance of, if you ring 999, I think I can count the number of times I phoned 999, probably on the fingers of one. Certainly, I doubt I'll get into double digits, and, you know, I've been around a long time. Does it amaze you how many people treat you as, like, can you send someone around to switch the lights off?
Yeah, I mean, I was the same. I'm 23, and my mum is a nurse and brought me up that 999 is, like, for your leg hanging off or someone's dead. That was it. Whereas, yeah, that's not what we get called for. And unfortunately, a lot of it is they'll call and they'll say, oh, well, I tried my GP and I couldn't get an appointment, and I tried 111 and they didn't pick the phone up. So instead of looking at the problem and going, okay, so it's appropriate for a GP, I'll do this instead, they just assume we can do it. I think the biggest issue with the ambulance service is lack of education for the public.
Do you ever have times when you just look at the phone waiting for it to ring? Or the minute you sit down and I assume you put on a headset, it's just, boom, go, the calls come straight in?
This time of year, 24/7, you do get times of year that are a little bit nicer. But now we're coming into winter pressures, it's continuous.
And I assume Friday night, Saturday night, when the pubs are closing, that's, unfortunately, people get drunk and fall over or whatever it might be. That gets really busy, does it?
Yeah, and you get a lot of, like, domestics and stuff as well.
Oh, God, yes, of course you do. Okay, lastly, we've talked about the lunacy of it. Can you switch the lights off? I've stubbed my toe or whatever it might be. I've got toothache. You said every 1,000 there's a call that lives with you. What's the most meaningful call in that you've really helped someone that you can remember recently?
So I helped a woman deliver her own baby. So she was by herself with a child. Her child was 2. And she delivered her baby by herself, and I talked her through the instructions, and that has stuck with me since then.
How do they train? Have you had children yourself, Kate?
No.
How do they teach you to talk to a woman to get deliver her baby? How much training did that take?
So the initial training that we do is 6 weeks, classroom-based, and then you do 6 weeks of being mentored. So an experienced call handler, like myself now, would listen in to them and mark them and assess them. But to be honest, like the system isn't flawless. Like it doesn't account for everything. So when you do get something like a first party, you don't expect someone to be giving birth on their own.
No.
So you do have to kind of edit your instructions and use a bit of common sense sometimes as well.
Did the mum ever send you a picture of the baby?
I wish we were allowed something like that. I wish. No, yeah. Unfortunately not. We can't give anything like that. But I did get a message from the midwives after that her mum and baby were healthy and safe and left at home with the husband. So that was nice.
Kate, I've learnt so much. Thank you, and thank you for the work that you do. 12-hour shift for that young woman. Man alive. All right, and teachers are moaning about having to do an extra half an hour. Strange, isn't it? Coming up after the news.
Chancellor Rachel Reeves paves the way for tax rises, saying we're all going to have to contribute to fix the dire public finances. I'm LBC's Natasha Clark with the latest from Downing Street.
And that chat with Kate, the call handler, has made us a little late. Kate, you've made me late, which ain't great. 9.33, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC. Headlines read by Dominic Ellis.
The Chancellor has refused to rule out tax rises, saying she'll make the necessary choices in her upcoming budget. Speaking from Downing Street this morning, Rachel Reeves warned each of us must do our bit for the security of the country. The Chancellor will be speaking exclusively to Tonight with Andrew Marr here on LBC from 6 o'clock tonight. Investigations are continuing into whether a man accused of the stabbing attack in Cambridgeshire on Saturday is linked to other knife offences. Detectives are looking at a series of police call-outs in Peterborough on Friday. And train passengers have been told not to travel north of Preston until tomorrow. Repair work continuing on the West Coast Main Line after yesterday's derailment near Shap in Cumbria. LBC weather, wet and windy for much of England and Wales today. Drier for northern Scotland and the south of England. Feeling very mild, a high of 17 degrees.
LBC.
This year, Amazon are increasing the electric delivery vehicles we use across Europe to 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of, where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts, and where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden. Can they have their ball back, please? We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the future you want. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Imad, a GCSE student in year 11.
Alongside my core GCSEs, such as maths, English and science, I study creative subjects such as media, drama, art and design, business and music technology, which are all recognised by the industry.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
At TfL, we're making tube journeys faster in the future with signalling improvements underway on the Circle, District, Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines. And there's also the Elizabeth line already giving you fast journeys across central London. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Elizabeth Line is fast compared to other TfL modes. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Come back to talk about the school day and call handlers. What a conversation we had with Kate there. But around an hour or so ago, we were still talking in the wrap-up of Rachel Reeves' speech. She spoke for just under 20 minutes at a lectern with the slogan, Strong Foundations, Secure Future. Was flanked as she was by union flags. And in the room listening, LBC's political editor Natasha Clark, who is now outside Downing Street and joins me again. Well, we heard the idea there, didn't we, that her priorities, protecting the NHS, reducing national debt, improving the cost of living. Remind the listeners a little bit more of what we heard from the Chancellor. Natasha.
Morning, Nick. Yes, and one of those priorities that she did not mention was keeping taxes low on working people. That's something that this government have been saying to us for the last year and a half that they've been in office. And today, the message from the Chancellor, it seemed, at least to me, taxes are going up, but it's not my fault, Gov. She gave a really dire, gloomy speech about the state of the public finances. And as you say, I'm here in Downing Street, Nick, after that very long address to the nation. She set out the difficult choices, but said that she wanted to stabilise things for years to come.
There is a lot of speculation about the choices that I will make. I understand that. These are important choices that will shape the future of our country for years to come. I want people to understand the circumstances we are facing. the principles guiding my choices and why I believe they will be the right choices for our country.
But as I say, Nick, it's nothing to do with me. It's not my fault. That was what the Chancellor said earlier today. She set out instead why she thinks that Brexit, that COVID and the Tories are to blame.
The truth is that previous governments have not adequately faced up to these challenges. Too often, political convenience has been prioritised over economic imperative. The decision to pursue a policy of austerity after the financial crisis dealt a hammer blow to our economy, gutting our public services and severing the flows of investment that would have put our country on a path to recovery. And then a rushed and ill-conceived Brexit that brought further disruption, as businesses trying to trade were faced with extra costs and extra paperwork.
So, Nick, what does it all mean? Well, the Chancellor repeatedly today refusing to rule out breaking her promises to the people last year in that Labour Party manifesto not to raise VAT, income tax or national insurance. Here was how she responded to whether she would have to break that promise.
I will set out the individual policies at the budget on the 26th of November. That's not what today is about. Today is about setting the context for that budget. As Chancellor, I have to face the world as it is, not the world that I want it to be. And when challenges come our way, the only question is how to respond to them, not whether to respond or not. And as I respond at the budget on the 26th of November, my focus will be on getting NHS waiting lists down, getting the cost of living down, and also getting the national debt down.
And Nick, all the speculation in Westminster is about a rise to income tax. That is something she said she would not do. But the Chancellor says today she's going to have to put the country before the party, and she needs to deal with the world as it is, not as she wants it to be. She says we all need to contribute to fix the mess for years to come. It's a very tough message, Nick. Are the public, are businesses, MPs and voters going to take it? And a very curious message to try to dampen speculation about the budget. Very unusual for a Chancellor to make a speech like this 3 weeks out from budget day itself. But equally, Nick, she doesn't actually say what those hard choices are going to be. So we've got another 3 weeks of speculation about which taxes that might be and where the axe might fall. And already, Nick, the reaction is coming in. The FTSE 100 and the FTSE 250, when I last checked, were both slightly down. However, a little bit of an improvement in the gilts and long-term borrowing costs. That will be something the Chancellor may use to point to suggest that what she is doing is the right thing. The Tories have already gone on the attack. Mel Stride, the Tory shadow chancellor, says this morning this was an emergency speech from a chancellor panicking about the speculation that she has fueled. All Rachel Reeves has done is confirm the fears of households and businesses. Tax rises are coming. He says that she is failing to take responsibility for her own decisions, Nick.
More on those markets in a moment. Natasha, before I let you go, obviously we only stayed for a few of the questions and we came back to callers, but I did hear one question about the problems in which the Chancellor found herself as regards the rental of her property in Dulwich. Was that line pursued by other journalists, or did no one else go for that?
It wasn't a line that other journalists dug into, Nick. She gave a very, very short answer to one of the journalists who asked her about that and said, is it time for you to own up about the fact that you failed to get this licence, Chancellor? She pointed back to the words that she had used last week, those letters that she sent to the independent ethics advisor and the ones that Sir Laurie Magnus and the Prime Minister had used, saying basically, nothing to see here, I've been completely cleared and I've got nothing more to say on that matter.
LBC's political editor Natasha Clark reporting, just to pick up on what Natasha said about the markets, the FTSE 100 is down. It's a touch, really. 1.08%. I repeat, 1.08% at 9596.99. Not 999 calls now. 9.5. But anyway, it's down 1.07%. So not really doing that much to spook the markets. Or you could, of course, say reassure them either. Happy to come back to our conversation concerning the chance. We did a lot of it in the previous hour. But Natasha is absolutely right to say we're just now, I would argue, this is going to just fuel more speculation, I would have thought, rather than put anything to bed. So we're happy to come back to Rachel Reeves. By the way, if you haven't time on my watch, I am pretty certain that at least one of my colleagues will take that conversation on. But we're talking school days. We're talking the fact that the education secretary is concerned that too many schools, excuse me, are finishing at 2:30. She wants them to go to 3. There are 6.5 hours a day, 32.5 across a week. Who's been hanging the longest? Paul's in Bellingham. Paul, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Hello, Nick. I'd just like to share my experience at school. I went to school in the 60s and 70s.
Right.
We used to play in a league in sport with our fellow schools.
Yep.
And our games would be on a Wednesday afternoon or a Saturday morning. So it was always kind of a 5.5 day a week for us. But if it was a Wednesday afternoon match, we would have to come in on Saturday morning to make up for the school we'd missed. And that was the school day. But on a broader note about the schools, so I just thought I'd throw this one in.
Would all the children have been in the same... Is this secondary school?
Yeah.
Wouldn't some of you... Say Wednesday afternoon, some of you would have been in chemistry, some of you would have been in history, some of you would have been in English, wouldn't you? I mean, there would... But not the whole team would be in the same subject class, would they?
Well, our school was basically... I was lucky that my school year had 20 kids in it. So when the first 15 were playing in it, it was the whole class, basically.
I see,
including reserves. But you know, yeah, that's what we had to do. But before we leave the school subject thing, I mean, the big thing about schools that I think is it's an absolute disgrace, is that the school year is designed to facilitate child agricultural labour.
That's how
it was originally set up. It's in the original act. And isn't it about time that they addressed that, Nick? That we're still using a school year that is designed to facilitate child agricultural labour.
Wasn't it so they could put the children out on longer working, when there was more light, so they could
get the harvest in.
And they have longer days in July and August to get the harvest in.
It's absolute disgrace. If they want to go for growth, Nick, if they want to go for growth, they've got to go for a 48-week year school. And
what?
The schools should... Yeah, I think they should be going for a 48-week year.
Oh, well, I don't think any teacher's going to sign up to that, are they?
No more classroom hours. I'm not saying all the class... You know, no more classroom hours, no more teaching hours.
What?
Spread out more over 48 hours. Have more support staff.
No, Paul.
Yeah.
The children need... You can't expect a child to go to school for 48 weeks of a year, mate. That's nuts.
Yes.
Well, you agree.
And especially you've got extracurricular. You fill the. I'm not saying they have more classroom time. I'm saying they fill that time. Well, you think about it from a growth point of view, Nick, from an economy point of view. You're providing.
Yeah, the kids will be exhausted. So when they get to 18, they're completely and utterly cream crackered. No. Well, let's see what others make of it. Paul, I'm filing that as an idea. A 48-week school. If you're a teacher, do give me a call, how you respond to that. Plus, we're going to look at the impact on the markets as well, as the Chancellor. She wrapped up about a little under an hour ago. Are the markets reassured, or are they got the jitters? We'll give you more after this. 9:45, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The Chancellor has refused to rule out tax rises, saying she'll make the necessary choices in her upcoming budget. Investigations are continuing into whether a man accused of the stabbing attack on a train in Cambridgeshire on Saturday is linked to other knife offences. And train passengers are being told not to travel north of Preston until tomorrow after a landslide in Cumbria yesterday. LBC weather, wet and windy for much of England and Wales, drier for northern Scotland and the south of England, feeling mild, a high of 17 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The Rotherhithe Tunnel remains closed both ways, along with the Hanger Lane Tunnel, the A40, and also the Upper Thames Street Tunnel, which is Upper Thames Street between Southwark Bridge and Blackfriars Bridge. All three of those closures are because of problems with the cameras inside the tunnel. There's some sort of technical problem, and as a result, all three are causing severe delays in the area. Elsewhere, the M25's very slow anti-clockwise from junction 27 at the M11 to 25 at the A10, and that's because a lorry's broken down and two lanes are closed for recovery. And the A12's very busy southbound to junction 19 at the Boreham interchange, and that's where a lorry has broken down.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
How would you prepare the country for probably inevitable income tax rises? And the people who told you Brexit was going to be brilliant want you to stop talking about it. How does that work?
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or our new LBC app.
It's finally happened. I found it!
Found what?
The perfect Mini! And it's part of the Mini Stock event.
The what now?
The Mini Stock event! Unmissable savings on in-stock models, on top of existing offers. But I've got to move fast because when it's gone, it's gone!
Go get it, pal.
The Mini Stock event. Unmissable offers 6th to the 10th of November at your local Mini retailer. Available on new Mini Stock orders placed during the Stock event and registered by 31st of December 2025. Visit mini.co.uk/stock event.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 ow. Well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe. Only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
When you're smiling,
don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling. Keep on smiling. And the whole world smiles with you.
BanningDental.co.uk.
Business healthcare sounds pricey.
At Benenden Health, it's less than £16 per employee per month, which
will go up when people use it.
Actually, no. We don't do price hikes each time our services are used. Just
medical questionnaires for everyone.
No. And it's quick and easy to join.
Sounds great. I'm in.
Benenden Health. Healthcare done different. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Selected surgical procedures. Immediate access for businesses. Wait periods apply for personal membership. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
I think if I'm lucky, my next caller, Sophie, in Southampton is a teacher. And this will be an interesting response to a 48-hour week. Sophie, good morning.
Morning, how are you?
Well, I'm all right. Now, bear in mind, all this is live, so speak to me as you would speak to your children. Can I get your response to the idea put forward there by Paul? A 48-hour school year. Week school year, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head when you said that the students would be exhausted. Yes. I don't think that's really a sustainable way to run things. I mean, I know that we have a massive amount in the curriculum and we're always struggling to get through it all, but the point is we are working very, very hard.
Yep.
At quite sort of, full tilt.
Yep.
So it is very intense and you need a lot of downtime. But obviously, when I say that, I do come home and work in the evenings and the weekends anyway.
So, what is the work you have? Is it marking you have to do at the weekends?
Marking, planning. The thing is, we have so many different requirements. The students, we have SEND students. I have a visually impaired student. So we have to accommodate for all of these things in our planning. So it's not just, we're not just planning one lesson. We're planning five or six adapted lessons, and obviously when you've had a lesson you've got to plan for the next one based on everything
might I ask, Sophie, what subject do you teach?
English.
You teach English, okay, and is it at secondary level?
Yes, it is.
So let's just for the purpose of debate say that your students are going to be studying the work of Wilfred Owen, the First World War poet, right?
Yeah.
Well, you've been doing that for years. We all know Gas Gas Boys and Ecstasy of Fumbling, whatever it might be. What is the prep to be done there?
I've done it. But my students haven't.
Well, I know, but that's why they're your students, Sophie. That's what's called teaching. Surely that's... However you taught last year's... I'm just going to say year... I don't know, year 12. However you taught last year's year 12 about Wilfred Owen is how you'll teach next year's year 12
but
about Wilfred Owen.
That assumes it went perfectly the first time. And there's always changes that can be made to make it better. You'll learn something different. Every year you teach something, you will learn something that...
And you need to plan
work,
that?
It works better.
You need to plan that in?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm surprised at you, Nick. I'm surprised.
What have I done now?
I'm surprised at your attitude that teachers are in some way, I don't know, that we're moaning about having an extra 30 minutes. I work until my school day is from 8:30 till 3:10, so I'm not one of the 2:30
right.
schools anyway.
Right.
But even so, I only have a half an hour lunch, which I work through. I only have 15 minutes, which I work through at break time, because there are other things going on, aren't there? There are students who need me as their tutor.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing. Let me say about the teacher. And I've got a very, very close friend as a teacher. He's a really, really close buddy. I've known him forever. And he works damned hard. And I know a lot of teachers work damn hard. And I don't buy this idea that you only work, what is it, you all get 13 weeks holiday a year, whatever, because but the one thing I would, I mean, for instance, if I was a French teacher, right,
mm-hmm.
I've taught the kids how to do je regarde, tu regarde, I don't need to plan that. There's no planning, or we go to the bibliothèque, or whatever it might be. I can't pretend I've got to plan that, Sophie, in
but
all
that's
honesty.
That's not what you're planning, Nick, is it? You're planning,
well,
you've
I'm not
got a
teacher.
Whole new set of, well, I'll tell you, you've got a whole new set of students who all have different needs. We teach mixed ability, which means that I have to make sure that there is enough stretching challenge for my very able students, but I'm not leaving behind my students who may be lower ability or have SEND. So I have to make sure that all of those nuances are perfect every lesson.
Well, if they don't work hard, they just get detentions. That's the way I solve it. Just hand out loads of detentions, Sophie.
If they're not very able, is that fair?
Well, they soon get able, won't they? If they want to be able to go home at night, they'll
stop. No, they won't just get able. That's not how it works.
Do you think I'm not cut out to be a teacher, Sophie?
Probably that's the fact of the matter, really, yes.
I'll leave teaching to you, and shall I stay on the radio? Is that safer for everyone?
Yeah, let's do that.
You look after yourself, Sophie. Thanks for having a sense of humour. But I get what you say about lesson planning, and you probably are literally teaching me a lesson on that. Sophie, thank you. The big news of the day is, of course, the speech that was given by the Chancellor, and I did say that we would tell you what this has meant to the markets. So Hargreaves Lansdown, Steve Clayton, who's head of equity funds, says she wants growth to boost revenues and ease the debt constraints, but these constraints are very real, give her little room for manoeuvre. Markets know this, which is why there's been very little reaction to the speech, given it revealed little substance. Equities were under pressure already this morning. The FTSE remains about 0.7% down. Gilt yields up by about 2 basis points, in common with European bond yields, while sterling has barely budged. So in summary, what was all that about? It's done absolutely nothing. We might talk Rachel Rees, but let's stay with schools for now. Pippa's... we have another teacher. Pippa in Woking, you're a teacher. Good morning, Pippa.
Good morning.
What subject do you teach?
Food and nutrition and textiles.
Now, please don't tell me you need to plan out and make a cake.
Oh, don't get me started.
Thank God you don't. You've agreed you don't.
No!
How to break an egg?
No, we don't bake cakes. It's food and nutrition. We're doing amino acids today.
Well, you shouldn't be doing acids at any time of the day if you're a teacher, really. That's a real worry. I've heard there are pressures in the common room, but this is too much. I'm doing acids, sir!
And denaturation and enzymic browning.
But you've done it before. What?
Yes, we have done
enzymic
it before.
Browning. He's just signed for Newcastle United, isn't he?
Listen, excuse me, would you listen, please?
Sorry, go ahead. I'm sorry. Sorry, miss. Go ahead, miss.
No, just to support Sophie, basically. Bless her.
How long have you been a teacher?
40 years.
40 or 1-4?
No, 40.
40 years, right. And you... What do you need to plan lessons for? You've been doing it for 4 decades, Pippa.
Okay, we know... Sophie and I know our subjects. We know what we're going to teach. We don't know how we're going to teach it because we don't know our new classes. And if you teach the same lesson every year in the same way to different kids, you're a poor, poor teacher.
if you teach the same... What, if it gets results, so all the children know how to do acid? Sorry, amino acid.
No. Sophie was right in saying, what you've got in front of you are 25, 30 children. They're all different.
Yeah, no, I understand.
They're all different, and they're all different from 40 years ago, and 20 years ago, and 10 years ago, and they all have their own needs, and you have to plan for every eventuality. That's the planning.
Such as?
It's not...
What sort of eventualities?
So, you've had your class once, you've put the feelers out, you've seen who you've got in front of you.
Yeah.
You've got little Johnny in the corner who can't sit still. You've got...
Well, he will if he gets given a detention, but anyway, go on.
Well, no, he won't, that's the thing. No, well, if the parents are on board, yes, maybe, but okay. But that's quite rare. Down the back, you've got Shannon, who is having a strop because her boyfriend's just left her
to do an extra hour after school writing out, I mustn't get worried about my boyfriend 25 times.
The whole point of it, Nick, is to cater for our clients, just as you're doing.
They're not your clients. They are your pupils. They are there to learn.
I'm trying to put it into language that non-teachers might understand.
They're just pupils. We all understand the word pupils.
Yeah, but you have to cater for what you've got in front of you. And the planning is not the same for every group of students, of pupils.
What time do you get to school, miss, in the morning?
Oh, 7:30.
What time do you leave, miss?
I go quite late because I've been doing it for 40 years and I don't have to plan.
Well, you just said you did have to plan.
No, I'm being sarcastic. I try to leave by 5:30, but it's usually about 6 o'clock.
5 days a week?
Oh, God, yeah.
That's a long week.
It's hard, Nick. It's really hard, and that's why you can't get teachers.
Look after yourself. Enjoy doing acid later today. Amino acids. Pippa, thank you very much for that. Apologies to Harry, to Mark, to John and others. We're done for another day. If you missed any of today's show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. You can stay up to date on the top stories and opinions, put your news categories in the order you want, pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. That's it for me. James O'Brien's The Other Side of the News here on LBC, and I will be back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and I find myself haunted by Brian Cox's absolutely pitch-perfect portrayal of the media mogul Logan Roy in the TV series Succession. Admittedly, he's talking about his own children when he just says, I won't do the accent, you are not serious people. How often do you think that when you encounter what passes for political commentary or political coverage in the UK media at the moment? Brexit? Obviously. COVID? Obviously. Liz Truss, 14 years of Tory rule, obviously, have done more than anything else to create the economic situation that the current government is charged with navigating. Why is it so hard for some people to admit that?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Chancellor has refused to rule out tax rises in her upcoming budget, saying she'll make the necessary choices. In a speech from Downing Street this morning, Rachel Rees warned everybody must do their bit for the security of the country. She pointed to a series of global challenges to the UK economy and also blamed the Conservatives for years of economic mismanagement.
We finished the pandemic with higher death rates and higher debt than our peers. This isn't about relitigating old choices. It's about being honest with the people about the consequences that those choices have had. It is my job to deal with the world as we find it, not the world that I might wish it to be.
The Tories say Miss Reeve's speech shows that she's panicking about the speculation that she's fuelled about potential tax rises, while the Lib Dems say it demonstrates that the budget will be a bitter pill to swallow. LBC's political editor Natasha Clark was at number 10 and listening to Rachel Reeves' speech.
Taxes are going up, but it's not my fault. That felt like, to me, the message that the Chancellor was trying to make, setting out why she thinks that Brexit, COVID and the Tories are all to blame for this. And she repeatedly refused to rule out breaking her promises to the people last year in the manifesto, which vowed not to increase VAT, national insurance or income tax.
And the Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, will be speaking exclusively to Tonight with Andrew Marr here on LBC from 6 o'clock this evening. In other news, investigations are continuing into whether a man accused of a stabbing attack in Cambridgeshire is linked to other knife offences. 32-year-old Anthony Williams has appeared in court charged with the attempted murder of 10 people on a train on Saturday. Police are now also looking into separate reports of a man with a knife in Peterborough on Friday evening. Train passengers have been told not to travel north of Preston until tomorrow after yesterday's derailment in Cumbria. The Avanti West Coast train struck a landslide near Shap. 4 people suffered minor injuries. And the owner of Primark says it's considering splitting the retailer from its food business. AB Foods is reviewing its structure after annual profits fell 13% to £1.7 billion. It also owns brands including Kingsmill, Ryvita and Twinings. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 101 points at 95.99. The pound buys $1.30 and €1.13. LBC weather, wet and windy for much of England and Wales today. Drier for northern Scotland and southern England, feeling very mild though, with a high of 17 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. It's 3 minutes after ten. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Taxes are going up in the budget. That much is clear. The point of the speech today, because apparently some people haven't worked this out, is essentially to prepare the markets for that imminent shock, or even to render it not as shocking as it would otherwise be. One word I've seen used by people who know what they're talking about is pitch rolling. She is breaking a manifesto pledge, but she's not going to actually shatter the glass in the course of a speech 3 weeks before D-Day. And what I found most extraordinary, well, there's two things. I don't know, on a scale of 1 to 10, this might be a question that I ask you, how stupid not to have done this a year ago. How spectacularly stupid to have waited a year. In fact, more. Would that be an interesting finding? Why didn't they do this in opposition? To which I suppose the most obvious response is, excuse me, they won a massive majority. How can you possibly be picking holes in what they did in opposition? To which I suppose I'd respond by saying, well, opposition should be preparation for government. But why didn't you do this in opposition? Why have you allowed this nonsense to get halfway around the world before the truth has got its trousers on? Do you know, I heard people today, this morning, who told you to vote for Brexit, who explained to you that it would be a brilliant idea, that Boris Johnson would be a brilliant Prime Minister, that austerity was a necessary corrective because the banking crisis caused by bankers had nothing to do with bankers, and the prices must therefore be paid by, you know, teaching assistants in your child's school, the closure of libraries and youth clubs, and a massive reduction in the provision of things like leaf sweepers for your local council. The people who told you Brexit would be brilliant, Boris Johnson would be brilliant, Liz Truss would be brilliant, austerity was brilliant, are now saying, how dare she mention Brexit? Actually, let's pause for a moment just to reflect on the incredible combination of ignorance and dishonesty that you would need to deploy to shift effortlessly from championing Brexit while not understanding anything to, as the reality of it begins to settle on a population, claiming that we shouldn't talk about it anymore. We should move on. If you were an arsonist, how keen would you be for everybody to move on from the fact that you've just burnt down their house? Answer, very keen. So let's call an arsonist an arsonist. That's what they're doing now. It's frankly extraordinary, and you only need a tiny reminder of how bent the British media is when it comes to chiefly those three or four issues, Brexit, Boris Johnson, Liz Truss, austerity, to remember that it doesn't end. You kind of naively think that a morning will come. I get exactly the same thing on January the 6th with Donald Trump. I just thought, okay, that's nice. We can all go back to normal now. We can all admit that this is a terrible aberration in our democratic development. We can go back to being on different sides of political arguments while agreeing on what the rules are, what the pitch looks like, and what constitutes a foul. We'll go back to having a referee who can blow the whistle. You've seen January the 6th. You've seen an attempt to both deny and overthrow a democratic election result in the United States of America, orchestrated and presided over by a man who is lying to everybody. And for about an hour, it looked like that had happened. It looked like everybody was saying, well, you know, I quite liked him in the past, but this is obviously too far. You can't be going around lying about election results and approving of violent mobs descending upon the Capitol. And then what? Fast forward a month, a year, 2 years? It's as if that never happened. It's quite extraordinary. I thought, naively, that something similar would happen with Brexit. I really did. I thought, naively, that the reality would become consensus. I thought we would all be able to agree. Oh, what a fool I was. I mean, imagine Farage, for example, ever admitting that it was a disaster. It's probably easier to imagine that in some ways. If there was a few quid in it, he'd probably admit it was a disaster tomorrow. But the idea that they would say, oh, I'm terribly sorry, we made a mistake. The people in my profession, the idea that any of them would ever say, I'm terribly sorry, I should never have told you that Boris Johnson was going to be a brilliant prime minister, that Brexit was going to be good for this country, or that Liz Truss was an economic genius. But you'd think, I don't know. So I should be unsurprised by that extraordinary combination of ignorance and dishonesty, because we've seen it pretty much everywhere for the last 10 years. But I think I am surprised, and I shouldn't be. This is where the naivety kicks in. I shouldn't be surprised that they now are saying that you've got to stop talking about it. They don't think that the Chancellor of the Exchequer, when explaining the fiscal environment in which she has to make her next budget 3 short weeks from now, these people don't believe that Rachel Reeves should talk about the single biggest contributors to the state of the economy.
The decision to pursue a policy of austerity after the financial crisis dealt a hammer blow to our economy, gutting our public services and severing the flows of investment that would have put our country on a path to recovery. The years that followed were characterised by instability and indecision, with crucial capital investment continually sacrificed and hard decisions put off again and again. And then a rushed and ill-conceived Brexit that brought further...